I'm going to tell you a few stories. All we have to do is listen.
Welcome, everybody, to another movie podcast, the show that finds it hard to separate the enraged fanboys from the satisfied sideliners. I am Oscar, and with me today only...
Is Ralph. A sick Ralph. My apologies ahead of time.
Yeah, we're doing editing magic today here, folks. We recorded our review of The Last Jedi already with Luke. Luke is in that portion of the episode, but alas, he has retreated to some other state for work reasons, so he won't be around for a bit. But he was able to stick around for that review, but he's not in the intro or in the first two reviews here, just so you know. And what we are... I forgot what's part of the intro. What we are is that we are a podcast that reviews new or new-ish films on a bi-weekly basis, and we like doing three, you know, because most podcasts, I don't know if you know this, Ralph, most podcasts tend to review just one movie a week, right? The weekly ones, right?
I think so.
They do one. I'm not saying they don't do a bad job. They give it their due, but they tend to review one. I figure since it's bad enough that we do bi-weekly because of our schedules, but that's why we do three. I feel like doing three compensates and more for like a weekly show. Like if we were weekly and just do one a week, you'd still be short on the amount of reviews we do. So I figure this one, it balances out. Like the force, if you will.
I suppose.
Do you understand?
Yeah. I get where you're going.
Okay, cool. This is episode number 39, and it is our last main reviewed show of the year, I should say. And today's show will include, as I said earlier, Star Wars The Last Jedi. We will also do a more recent film, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's latest adventure flick, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, as a little fan fodder there. And then we're doing a review of The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is the latest by Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos. And that is going to be our first review this evening. Feedback can always be sent to, of course, at podmoviecast@gmail.com. And our website, where we have everything from marathons to countdowns. The best of list is about to be revamped and renewed for this year, I should say. As well as bonus episodes, is available at otherpodcast.com. Now, let's talk about some of the recent stuff, recent titles we've been watching lately. I will start off, because I have three. Ralph, you only have one, I believe.
Yes.
I'll start with the worst one first, and that is American Assassin.
Oh, that was bad.
Shocker. Bad. Let me read the description here. From IMDb, there's a bunch of them, but I'm going to read the shortest one. After the death of his girlfriend at the hands of terrorists, Mitch Rapp is drawn into the world of counterterrorism, mentored by tough-as-nails former U.S. Navy SEAL Stan Hurley. That guy who's training him is played by Michael Keaton. And Dylan O'Brien plays the main actor. So anyway... this movie is when the trailers were coming out, it was geared as an action flick, kind of like the Bourne Identity style with the intrigue and spy stuff, but also with the action and the choreography and whatnot. But also it gears as like a, have you seen Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones?
And yes.
It's kind of like sound like that also, where it has Michael Keaton, this badass guy who's training the young okay. Spunk. And the movie was just very forgettable, and I couldn't tell you a scene if you had a gun to my head right now, Ralph. That's and I saw it 2 days ago or 3 days ago. It's pretty bad. No, I'm kidding. It's not that bad. It is forgettable, though. And I wish the movie was more interesting in just being, like, trying something new. Because this is the 20th movie that I could probably just rattle if I think about it, you know, like, of this kind. And they're all done slightly different. There's the Green Zone. There's the whatever. And then there's Bourne. And then there's... And some of those are way better than this movie. And this movie, yeah, there are worse ones, for sure.
Right.
But not by much. And I feel like American Assassin falls, unfortunately, in that worse road where it's not even so bad that it's memorable. It's just bad to be... It's just mediocre, so therefore it's forgettable, which makes it bad. And Michael Keaton is, you know, I think going too far in the tough-as-nails guy. In this movie, like, it's not his best performance, not even from this year, because I like them in Spider-Man a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, for example. Or even that, because earlier this year he did that McDonald's movie, too. And that one, he was doing something interesting. Even if I didn't like that movie that much, he was still the most interesting thing. And this one, he's not the most interesting thing. Or if he is, it's not from his, like, great acting. It's because everyone else sucks worse than he is. So I don't really recommend it. But if you are interested in, like, dumb action, for sure watch it, but just you're gonna have to skip a lot because there's a lot of in-between stuff. It's not like all action or anything. So that is American Assassin, out on available to rent or buy and shit like that. My next movie here is a movie that one of my movies I've been trying to catch up with, and I finally caught up with it for the end of the year wrap-up stuff. It's called Columbus, as in Columbus, Indiana, the somewhat famous city/town. Let me read the description here. A Korean-born man finds himself stuck in Columbus, Indiana, where his architect father is in a coma. The man meets a young woman who wants to stay in Columbus with her mother, a recovering addict, instead of pursuing her own dreams. And I know that kind of has a whiff of, like, coming of age. It is not. Or if there is one, it's mainly a whiff. And it's not, like, a main thing, just to let you know. And it's written and directed by Kogo Nara, who is, I guess, a really good director. I haven't seen his stuff. Unfortunately, I have not seen his stuff. But I hear he's pretty good. And even though he's kind of new and starting.
Okay.
And this movie stars John Cho, who is from Star Trek.
Okay.
Haley Lou Richardson, Parker Posey is in this movie. I don't see enough Parker Posey in my movies. I need her back. Aaron Allegherty, and Rory Culkin is in this movie too. And this it's just like a very touchy, very touch, a heartfelt, touching movie. Totally sells. You're going to learn a lot about architect that you never wanted to learn, but when you learn the facts and the stuff they bring up in the movie, kind of casual conversation style, or sometimes in a teaching conversation style, because the main girl, she does tourism, and that town is known for its architectural splendor. A lot of people come from there, I guess. And she, the way she practices with him or whatever with John Cho is you kind of learn by happenstance. The movie completely feels like an architect's wet dream, the way some of those buildings are shot in contrast to the actors that are talking or reacting. And it's really well made. I really, really liked it. And the acting was spot on. John Cho's best movie by far, not that I've seen many of his, but as far as his Hollywood compared to this indie stuff, way better than this one.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I really recommend it. It's a quiet film. It doesn't, I mean, the conflict is barely, like, it's not like a plot-driven thing. It's a organically character-driven thing only. So, you know, gird your loins if you hate that kind of thing. Obviously, if you don't like that kind of thing, don't watch it. But if you are not, you know, if you don't hate those things, I recommend it highly. Columbus, a really good movie. You know, it made me feel like, what's that movie with Tom Hardy where he's in the car all the time?
Drive?
No. Tom Hardy. He's driving from one place. Locke. Have you seen Locke? Luke and I saw it. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it.
Do you remember how that movie?
Conversations on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. The whole movie is just him. Remember how that movie? You start like you before you. By the time the movie ends, you feel like you know a lot more about cement and how cement works.
Sadly, yes.
It's like that with this movie, with architecture. Okay. I didn't see. I think it's sadly. I think it's kind of cool in that movie. But okay, I meant it as a compliment. But if it's bad for you, then I'm sorry.
I mean,
you said sadly. So.
Right.
Oh, you just think cement is not a very good thing to know. Maybe. My last film here is, I'm pulling it up because I actually have to type in the whole thing because it's not a popular movie. This is my indiest of indie movies that came out this year. The most indiest. I saw it on Mubi as a discovery from a first-time director or something like that. So it's super indie. It's called Radio Mary. And here's a description. In the elevator, a man touches Mary's shoulder and talks to her telepathically. From that day, everything changes in Mary's life. She starts reading people's minds, becoming a sort of living radio, and soon is pushed towards a bloody path. And it sounds like it's like the beginnings of maybe like a psycho horror movie. And if you count Body Toll, it is, but it's mainly geared as a mystery sci-fi.
Okay.
And it stars Kate Lynn Schell, and she's the main actress who's in almost every single part of this movie. And she's kind of known for her horror stuff a lot, for me anyway. She's in, you know, House of Cards, but she's in VHS in one of them or two of them. I think just one of them because they're all one-offs, I think. She's in a movie I'm looking for right now, Queen of Earth. That's right. She was in a movie I really liked, The Heart Machine. No, not that one. The Sacrament. Man, she plays like a good like cult follower to me. I'm trying to. Oh, Sun Don't Shine. Did you ever see that movie with me?
No.
Okay. Super indie also. Super, super indie. But I loved her in that movie. That was when I first like knew about her. And this is written and directed by Gary Walkow. And the premise is as good as it sounds in the movie. Like it's really realized really well. And there are touches of real sci-fi. Kind of like Midnight Special. The way it can just like pop. You know, and actually show itself in a way like nothing's. It's not like yo, is this really happening? It really is happening, and it is very indie, of course. But the effects that they're trying to make and the, you know, the editing tricks that they have to pull off in order to convince you that from one minute he's not in the room and the next minute he's there, that kind of thing. He does it really well, and the movie is a really nice little touch of sci-fi, I guess, thriller for me. And the ending, I'm not so sure what it means to me personally yet, or what it means to the film. I haven't had a lot of chance to think it over, but as soon as I do, hopefully I'll think of it more positively. But I recommend, if you can find this movie, I recommend it. It is a movie, but only for a few more days by the time this comes out. So, you have to subscribe and fucking watch it. But Radio Mary is on there, and I'm sure it'll be available somewhere someday soon. Those are the three films I watched. Raf, you have one for us.
Yes. I saw this movie based on true events. A biopic, I guess. No, not a biopic. It's just based on true events. The movie's called Deepwater Horizon. Action drama thriller. This is the movie directed by Peter Berg, starring Marky Mark, Kurt Russell, Doug M. Griffin, James Dumont, and a bunch of other people that you've seen, like John Malkovich. Yeah, exactly. Then if you've seen in other movies, like playing side roles, just like this one. This is about the Deepwater Horizon oil rig.
I believe I'm quoting both of us. When this trailer first came out, we were like, okay, we're skipping that right now.
Yeah, we did.
Because, you know, Marky Mark, most of his movies are not great. Some of them are really good, though. And he does make weird movies that are like, but most of them are like this one. They look like this one in the trailers and look pretty shitty or whatever. And I skipped it. And then I heard after the fact, that year it came out, which is last year, I think.
Yeah.
I heard it was actually really much better than people thought, and people should watch it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll add it to my mental queue or some queue. Never did watch it. So I'm glad you did. What did you think?
I will agree with what you heard from people.
Nice.
It is it's a good performance from him. He doesn't have to...
I hear he's the best thing. Yeah.
He's not forced to play a hero. He's just a guy who's... wants to do good by things, and he's like, he's following rules and he's doing things like that, and that leads him to be a good guy and kind of like the hero in the movie. But he's not really like he's just doing things that like one should do, you know, like being a good Samaritan almost.
Does the movie film it realistically or
to a certain point? Yes.
Okay. There's like a lot the perfect storm, like somewhere between the perfect storm and volcano.
Yeah,
something
like that. It's like, well, what like ends up happening movie, is right? It's a disaster. Yeah, I mean, nothing big. Where like, there's a big fire that happens, the oil rig, and then like explosions happen, and they're trying to get everybody out. And he goes to get people out. And then he's like, well, where's the big boss? So he goes look for the big boss, helps him get out, and then they're trying to get out. Like he's like pushing himself to be like the last person to help people out, basically.
Gotcha.
Hero wise, but at the same time, not really. Like, he just wants to make sure everybody's safe, you know, because he's almost like second in command. So it's like it doesn't feel like out of place for him. But it was obviously a lot of cool explosions and stuff like that. Shitty fucking thing that happens. The movie does a good job of remembering the people who did die on that oil rig.
Yeah.
What's it called? And then it's a really heartfelt movie overall of what happened in this tragedy and why it happened and why we have things like tests and QA checks and all these things. All right. We have them for reasons, not just to ignore them.
That's nice. Okay. And where did you see it? Maybe I can watch it. Is it on Netflix?
I don't know if it's on Netflix. I think it's HBO.
Okay.
Well, as you should aware. So, yeah.
Or I have access to both. Cool. So that is Deepwater Horizon. And before we get to our first review, real quick, I want to mention our bonus content this month. 5 months ago, we did a bonus episode for those who donated. Spider-Man Homecoming. We did that, you and me, Ralph. And this month is when it comes out to everyone. It already came out by the time you're listening to this, a few days ago, I think. And it's out for everyone to listen to, even though it's 5 minutes late. But if you are interested in the latest bonus episode of the month, we're doing, for the month of December, The Shape of Water. We still have to see that, Ralph, and record it by before the end of the year, which, of course, will be the end of the year. It's going to be fun. Guillermo del Toro's movie, I hear all but good things, all great things about it. And it stars Michael Shannon. There you go. Like Michael something.
Yeah.
A lot of first names and a lot of white names, and I don't get them all. So, if you're interested, check that out on our website, otherpodcast.com. Now, let's get into our first main review of the evening with The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
They're gonna see us from outer space.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about Pod.
It's nothing serious.
No, it is.
Like we're the stars of the human race. Human race.
Where did you two go?
When the lights started out, they don't know what they heard. Strike the match, playing loud, giving love to the world.
How did his father die?
A surgeon never kills a patient. An anesthesiologist can kill a patient, but a surgeon never can.
Don't be scared, Mom. You'll see. You won't be able to move either. But you'll get used to it.
Where is she? What did you do to her?
Steven, a charismatic surgeon, is forced to make an unthinkable sacrifice after his life starts to fall apart, when the behavior of a teenage boy he has taken under his wing turns sinister. The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Real quick here, charismatic? I didn't see that. but maybe he is to others. Written and directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, the man who brought us The Lobster from last year, which made it my number. I forget what number, but it made my top 10 last year. That's how good I liked the movie. And Dogtooth, which he did one of his first breakout film that I love, crazy love that movie. And then he did Alps, which I didn't love as much. I liked it, but it wasn't that great for me. So I feel like maybe every one of his other movies, like every other I like and every other I hate. And this movie stars Colin Farrell as that doctor, Nicole Kidman as his wife. Alicia Silverstone's in this for a little bit. I don't know why she built so high. I guess because she's famous. Barry Keoghan as that kid, Sinister Martin, and his two sons played by Rafi Cassidy and Sonny Sujik. So, Raf, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. What did you think of this movie in broad terms?
In broad terms, that's like...
In broad terms, without spoilers.
So sure, of course. Keep it,
yeah, I guess.
I think it has a... I think this movie wants to talk about something, but it doesn't want to tell me what it wants to talk about. And I don't know if that's the point of the movie. We had a prior conversation, and we made many decisions, or many points, should I say.
Yeah, that could be or could not be, and maybe others we haven't thought of.
Right, exactly. Right. And I don't know if I necessarily like how a lot of the acting is done in this, or why we have very, like... cold people in this movie.
That's putting it lightly, man. They're freezing.
Yeah, but it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch as a whole and take it in completely. And then it's also like I felt confused at the very end. At the end, still.
Okay, we'll definitely discuss that.
Of course.
I think this movie is. I agree that it's trying to say something, and we did make some points that I want to get to when we get to spoilers, because that's the best time to really mention it, because otherwise it'd be spoiling stuff ahead of time. But the movie, it looks like it's driven. By the way, I should say that in a craft sort of sense, craftsmanship. The movie is, he hasn't lost his touch as directors go. He has a very sure and steady hand as to the purpose of almost every angle and the way the shots are composed. Definitely spot on. And the writing is weird, like it's always been. Like his writing is always has been. So, but also purposeful too. So I think he knows what he's doing. I'm not saying this is a misstep. It's a misstep for me. So I'm not a big fan of this movie. It's a misstep for me. I can see why others would love it. Not that many do, by the way. A lot of people don't like this movie. But it feels purposeful. I feel like what I was feeling in this movie, maybe I was supposed to feel. Or this movie's not for me, what he was trying to say. And I just not meant to get it. Yeah. It's a combination of those things because the acting is really good. I think the casting is almost too good. Colin Farrell kills it, I think, because, he's played so many different types. He's played the comedian, he's played the action, he's played the drama. And this one, he's combining none of those. It's just pure, intense drama. He's kind of like It Comes at Night serious from earlier this year, if you remember that movie. That's how serious he is in this movie, even against the rest of the people in the movie.
Okay.
And Nicole Kidman plays the perfect cold fish, man. She is perfect cold. And then the kids
ice to the touch.
Yeah, ice. And she just does that really well. It must be her skinniness, I think, or something. but she's really good at that. So I think this movie, like I said, is very purposeful. I think it's going somewhere. I don't know exactly where, and I don't think I like it, even if I do know where it goes. It's a very strange movie to talk about.
But it is.
But we're going to try. That's our job. So what would you like to start off with, Ralph? I mean, so we get – let's get an introduction of Martin. What did you think of Martin, and especially for now, his introduction to these characters or to us as audiences? Martin is that kid. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
He's the main kid, right?
The main kid.
Okay, what do I think of Martin? I don't know, especially where – I don't know how I felt. His introduction was weird. I didn't know if this was supposed to be like mentor-mentee.
Right, it did feel mentory, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, it also felt like courtship for me.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that too. I was surprised. I didn't get that.
And then it definitely felt like a weird relationship, and you didn't know why that relationship was there. And obviously, you find out later on in the movie. But I don't know. The kid also feels like this isn't. I don't find people like this in my everyday life. Like these characters, these people. Like I don't feel like people act like this in my everyday life, right?
Right, definitely not. But no movie by this guy, he has never been a realist.
Sure, no, I understand that. But what I'm saying is, also like this kid, the way he talks,
yeah,
and the way like. He portrays himself in the movie, mm-hmm. is really weird because he's just very factual and very to the point, and mm-hmm. and then that's it.
Very very direct, and but not leader direct, but he kind of forces his opinions to be facts and to be action.
Yeah, exactly.
For people would follow, but he's not a leader.
No, he's not.
Like he doesn't have like when I don't know where the charisma is coming from according to his IMDb plot synopsis, but he's not like there is, and also not a great sense of like justice either. It seems like what he's doing is right to a point, but it seems like he has another agenda, or he does things because it's his nature to bark orders.
Right, yeah.
Is that the feeling I'm right?
It's weird.
That's a strange thing. I'm sure there's a word that an English major has at the top of their head that they can say, fortunately, I did not take English as a major. So not that good or well. So I can't pinpoint my emotions here in one word or one sentence, but I'm trying here. So I do think they're doing a good job. I just don't know to what end, and we're going to get into that. We probably should get into it soon, but my feelings on Martin – as a character, I first thought that other than mentor, is that this kid was like the love child of an affair he had that he's still hiding, or maybe they knew about it, but they're so cold fish, they're like, okay, stop doing it, but you have to take care of this kid or something.
Yeah,
I could have bought any reaction. If the courtship thing angle had played out like the way you thought, Ralph, I wouldn't have been surprised either. Because of what this guy has written in the past, because of how dark he gets, because of how weird he gets. Like, I feel like Yorgos Lanthimos, like, this is probably how he acts in real life, like these characters. And he probably grew up in a town called Lanthimos Land, where all these people genuinely act like this. And it's very normal for him. And just for us, for the rest of the world, it's like genius weirdness. And maybe for him, it's like a regular Tuesday. I have no idea. But he does write a very specific way.
Lanthimos Land.
Lanthimos Land. Come on. Right? Come on. Lanthimos Landia. And for those reasons, I love the guy always. I'll always watch his movies, even the ones that don't work like this or Alps.
Okay.
So, but Martin's introduction is once I found out what it was, that it was the kid's, some patient's son that died under his scalpel. I felt weird reading immediately because I start thinking of Martin as an engine for plot, as an engine for the main conflict of the movie. And of course, I was right. It turns out to be that. The plot synopsis said so, too. It's not hard to discern. But once that came about, and I was like, where is the movie going to go from here that's going to be satisfying? And it doesn't satisfy me, but it does go to places that I never thought it would. So can I blame the movie for that? Can I blame the movie for not satisfying me, even though it does a lot anyway?
I mean...
It's hard.
No, you can't. I mean, the movie wants to do what it wants to do.
It's kind of the movie's doing, hard to do.
It does its own message. Yeah. We're just so programmed to get different things.
Maybe. But, I mean, so the movies work for me, or at least two of them do.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I get it. Like,
maybe because they're solid. So hateable.
I'm solid on those
maybe because they're so hateable.
Yeah, maybe. It's kind of hard
no
to write.
Lovable character.
Right. Martin's the closest, and he's not very good.
No, he's
not very good. Like, I would not hang with him or anything. I would not say a word to him.
Like, the only thing, and I'm not trying to offend anybody here, the only reason I would ever, like, give Martin the benefit of the doubt or whatever, like, I guess see him more charismatic or more lovable, is that he doesn't look like he has, you know, he's not the smartest boy out there. He doesn't look like it. He doesn't act like it either.
Yeah.
Other than that, he's smart. He's not dumb. But at the same time, it's like he doesn't, I don't know, he portrays like this kid who's like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I really like the kid Martin's acting. I did like his acting. I just because I thought there was always something worrying underneath. Like he has this plan he's hatching. Like maybe he is smarter than he seemingly. Like his paranoia about that mole he had, and he was constantly making excuses to go to see him to check up on him in order for him to ask questions about his life, and then bring him to his mom. And Alicia Silverstone has one scene in this movie early, like before the first half of the movie ends, is where she's like really hitting on him, and really in love with his hands. And when you see the movie in context, right, now that you know you've seen the whole thing, think back on that scene. And does that scene make less sense or more sense to you? That scene where Martin's mom is hitting on this doctor dude that killed her husband, by the way.
It's just a plot point at that point.
See, well, the thing is that I don't think anything's in this movie for no reason. So if I think of, if I try to put it in those terms.
Well, that's just fuel, I think.
Oh, fuel, okay.
That's used for fuel.
Like maybe like misdirection for the surgeon?
Yeah.
That could be it, you're right. But I think it was trying to show us that it's all on Martin that he's doing this and not on the mother at all. Like the mother has...
Yeah, I would agree with
you. I think that's what it's showing because of scenes after that. And then Martin starts, putting blame on this surgeon that doesn't exist. And we'll talk about that because that's past the halfway point. But it's weird. I think that's the point of that scene anyway. And Alicia Silverstone, I haven't seen her forever. I love her. She's, it's not great, but she's not bad either. Right? You liked her? I don't know if you're a big fan of Silverstone.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of movies in the 90s and shows, of course, that I've seen. Or not shows, but movies that, obviously Clueless and then there's Hideaway and shit. So, so it's kind of hard to pinpoint my feelings, but I will say that I will probably not be watching this movie again. Not just because, you know, Netflix announced 80 movies for the next year, plus every other movie out there, meaning there's no time to watch old shit again. Not just because of that. It's just because the movie is so unbearably dour. And I think part of the movie's point is also to make you feel like these characters are feeling. And in turn, makes the movie fucking bitter. And it's a bitter pill. It's like, it could be 12-year-old or 20-year-old scotch, but it still tastes pretty bitter. And I don't care how good it is. I don't think I can watch this movie again.
Yeah.
How are you?
I don't feel like I care for anybody here.
Yeah, it's another thing. It's like Sunny in Philadelphia, but I know that's not the same for you, but it is like that. It's just too hateable for me to watch again.
Yeah, no. Well, in this one, they're not even hateable funny. Like in,
right, that's true. Right? At least that show has funny, right?
Exactly. In this one, they're just hateable
because
you wouldn't want to be any of these people.
Yeah.
Like, I would never want to be any of these people.
Or date them either.
Yeah. Like,
or date the daughter or when you're older. Or know them or be neighbors to them.
Yeah, neighbors.
Neighbors is awful, too. Yeah. Everything's awful. Can you imagine this Christmas decorations? It's like nothing. Maybe like a wreath on one door and that's
it. White lights?
Yeah, white lights. Yeah. There's a Gimmel Girls episode about that. It's really funny. So let's get into spoilers for the killing of a sacred deer so we can get into more about this ending stuff. Starting right now.
What a charming boy.
Isn't he?
Yes, very. How did his father die?
Car crash. Driving home. Smashed into a pole. Killed instantly.
How long have you known him?
Quite some time. He was a patient of mine, years ago.
Did you go to the funeral?
I did go, yes.
Why didn't I go with you?
I think I told you about it, but you were busy or something.
All right, so the part I was talking about that I feel like Alicia Silverstone's first scene when he hits on her, hits on him, sorry, I guess I'm saying that wrong, is because after that, you know, once the hammer goes down, that there's like a sinister reason behind this kid's involvement in their lives, because he starts blaming, like, shooting Nicole Kidman, these ideas about, oh, he's hitting on my mom and shit, they're fucking God knows what. I mean, she likes him too, don't get me wrong. It's like, that's the only truth he tells.
Yeah.
Like, add a little truth to a lie and it makes it better, right? And I feel like, what was the point of that? And it seems like the point of it was to get everyone against Colin Farrell's character. Am I right?
Yeah, I can't think of any other reason.
It can't be any other reason that I can think of. Other than the fact that overall he's breaking down his family.
To finally make Colin Farrell make a decision.
Help him out?
Yeah, because...
In what way would that help?
Well, because, like, he gets everybody to hate him, right? Or he gets everybody to hate Colin Farrell.
Okay,
right?
I'm with you.
His whole family. So, the person that he likes the least is the person he's going to go choose to off.
Or you mean hates the... Likes the least, you said. Okay.
I said likes the least. I thought you said it wrong.
My bad.
What, hates the most?
Hates the most. Same thing. Right. Yeah. You're right. That's what I was thinking in my head. Why did you say it that way? It just confused me. I hear you. And that, I could be right. That's a little fucked up. But yeah, you're right. Because sometimes you don't know how much you love a person until you hate them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole love-hate combination. Right?
Sure.
You love things you hate. You hate things you love. So in that case, I must really love The Walking Dead. No, I don't. Uh-huh. Okay, I can see that. I didn't think of that. That's a really good angle. I don't think the kids that... I mean, he's like... That's like Ellen Page and fucking Card Candy level smart.
God, yeah.
Right? She's a genius in that movie.
Yeah.
If you see the results of that movie. But I'm not saying Martin is that. I feel like Martin... I feel like, Yorgos Lanthimos has a premise, like a weird, quirky premise to every one of his movies, except this one. But this one does have one, but it doesn't come up till like almost the third act, in which is like what he's been saying all along.
The movie does like
tell you.
Yeah. The movie does take over half the movie to get to these parts.
Yeah, it does, and then you could tell that the movie's slowly, fucking slowly, getting to a point, and it's getting to a finale, and it's getting intense. And I do like that the movie succeeds in an intensity, and it does get fucked up, it does get crazy. I mean, not like. I've seen crazier, of course. But it does get there. I just feel like it was not enough or too little too late or a combination of those things for me to personally be satisfied in any cinematic way, really, or most cinematic ways. So with that in mind, I think we're meant to be tortured like this family is being tortured. And I feel like as much as we like to make fun of them, they're cold, they don't have any feelings, they fucking have to have something. I mean, what is this power that Martin has over the children? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't get it.
How did that happen? I mean, I remember him.
He doesn't really have power over both children. He has power over the girl.
But the boy a little bit too.
Very little.
I mean, how does he convince? How is the... Because the boy gets sick first.
Yeah.
Or sick, or just say, stops eating and
well,
shit.
I think he makes him jealous that he knows more about his father than he does.
Okay. Yeah, okay,
then,
I'm with you on that one.
And then he
so uses jealousy for the boy and uses like a romance for the girl.
He was using the seat of doubt of like, yeah. Well, you're the black sheep of your family almost.
Right. Yeah, because he's also the youngest. So I mean, how much can he achieve? Goddamn it.
Right. Exactly. Right.
That's cute. We have Leo here in the room, like always. So what did you think of Martin and the girl then?
He doesn't really woo her. I don't feel like he actually like. Goes out of his way to woo her or anything like that. I just feel like he shows her a little attention that she needs desperately, and that little attention—that's
what I felt too.
And that little attention like drives her.
It feels like this family schedules her to every half hour point.
Exactly.
And I feel like she has no friends and no relations. So as soon as another party comes into the room, forget about it. She's going to be all over that guy.
Right. Exactly.
He could have been an ugly half fish man and
right, jumped him.
Because she offered a lot. To a young girl that shouldn't be doing any of that.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they're both the same age, roughly, but I'm not saying it's
close,
bad.
Yes.
But still, like, very weird.
Yeah.
Very weird and very forward and unexpectedly forward. So, okay, we see how... Okay, I'm with you. I buy those reasons. I didn't think of the sons all that much. What I'm surprised about, and this is where the premise finally kicks into this movie, the weird thing that is otherworldly, right, that is unlike our world here, right? They all have this, is that... Karma seems to have an actual power in this movie world.
Or karma, at least that's what we're going with.
Or sin, or at least Martin has powers, or something like that. Because this family starts getting legit sick at the time when they're supposed to. And by this time, the third act is well in its way, and it's bleeding orifices and all this, and legs not working and shit. They start happening seemingly spontaneously, and right? And like nothing's causing it, although you could argue maybe poison, I have no idea. So what did you think of that when that's introduced as a real thing? Like, did you expect it?
No, I didn't expect it. I didn't know. I thought I missed something in the movie, actually.
Right.
No,
the kid has been saying it all along. Like, it's going to happen. You just start choosing your fucking person. Like, he's just saying that all the time.
I get that, but right. I felt weird.
Right.
It felt like Drag Me to Hell weird. Like what's it called? Like, I'm a gypsy and I'm going to curse you.
Right.
These curses are going to come true.
Yeah, it does feel like a curse. Yeah. Right, not karma. Maybe more cursey. It's like, I mean, when... How's this? Were you surprised that he was under the influence when he killed his father?
No.
Okay. But if he wasn't, let's say if it was a legit accident, how much of this movie would change in your eyes? Let's say it was just a pure accident, because accidents do happen.
There would be no guilt. So that being said, there would be no seed to plant into the father. So this movie would be almost null and void.
So you're saying he wouldn't have chosen?
Well, there wouldn't have been a reason for me to feel bad for this kid because it was an accident. You know what I'm saying? So if it was because just time was...
Well, I still feel bad for the kid who believes that because he's still...
I don't think you go out of your way more than what you normally would. How many other people has died at his operating table?
Right.
Like, he doesn't...
I
mean, well, exactly. I don't see him having any other relationships with anybody else.
Right.
What is what we're trying to get at, right?
So you think he's guilt-tripping, like, if I...
Yeah, because he knew he fucked up. Mm. And he knew it could have been his mistake.
And his anesthesiologist knew it.
And that because of that, exactly. Well, he even goes, like...
Nicole came and found the truth from him.
Sure. Right. But he even says this stupid line where it's like, everyone knows that if you no surgeon kills anybody. Like,
it's all you can't save everyone, right?
No, it's not even the surgeon. It's like we don't make mistakes. That's what he says.
He does say that. That's right.
If anything, the anesthesiologist makes mistakes.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
Narcissistic. Like, very proud. Extremely proud. For a guy that seemingly has no emotion, but clearly his life is his work.
That's all it is.
Even though we only see his work in the beginning, which I assume that's the man he killed.
He has nothing else going for him. I think
but
so.
But he has a family that he's
sure, but
working hard to get them up. But
he just has an image. Right. He has the image of his family.
The nuclear family.
The nuclear family, maybe. Exactly. Yeah. And then
they got to go to Harvard.
His kids need to do good, so he does invest the time and stuff to make sure they do things.
It is like a work for him.
Yeah.
He does treat it like
but
a job.
But everything else, he's cold. And there's a big scene where Nicole Kidman kind of breaks on him, and she's like... You know, she's already implanted the scenes, and she's like, I like your hands, are so pretty, and this and that. And like, but you want me to make mashed potatoes for you and all these where she's like, you go about like your days going. I was like you, she's like, you live to like for nothing.
Yeah.
And she's like, and then your kids are dying in the next room, and you're talking about mashed potatoes, like fuck your mashed potatoes.
Yeah, she flips out completely understandably, and he responds like a child.
He responds just
like a child to me.
Oh my god.
It felt like I also understand his point of view, but it's still very childish. And you just man the fuck up, swallow your pride. I think this is what this movie is about. This movie is about the most prideful man in the world, you know, trying so hard to figure out how to swallow his pride. And that, to me, is a feat that I did not know I wanted in a movie. Or I would say I didn't want it. But it feels like the whole movie is about the most prideful man on the planet swallowing his pride.
Yeah.
Because
he
does do it in some form. He doesn't even do it in the right way, by the way. We'll get to that ending. But I like that point of view. And I feel like I feel more for Nicole Kidman's performance a little bit more. I feel like she does have more emotion. Not even the same because she's a woman. But because of her reaction to those points. She finally does snap.
Yeah. Okay. What was the worst part of this movie for you? What was the worst thing that you saw happen in this movie for you? That's what I wanted to ask.
Worst thing that I saw happen.
Yeah. I'll tell you mine. And mine was Nicole Kidman. What's it called? Giving her reason why she should live and not the kids.
The worst scene as you mean like a sinful scene, you mean?
It's not sinful for me. That was the most cringeworthy thing to hear from somebody say. Like,
okay, gotcha.
It was just like the worst scene for me to watch. It's like, oh my god, it's so bad. Like, why would you think, like, how could you even put yourself ahead of?
And they do treat kids? Like he has, like, I mean, they do fall for this power. It's like the rest of the family gets it, and he either doesn't or doesn't want to accept it. I think he does understand. He just doesn't want to accept it, that he has to make a choice. They know he has to make a choice. Everyone treats it as if it's the law of the universe.
Yeah.
Even though to you and me in real life, that's not how it works.
Exactly.
But that's how the movie treats it. So we got to just look it into the angle.
Right.
Those periscope glasses, whatever you want to call them. And, yeah, and I guess if I do that, and once I do that, I'm there now, I'm watching through the glasses, and I'm looking at this, and I got to say, that's really close, that scene. But for me, the worst thing is this the way he chooses.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. It's a pretty bad one, too.
The way he chooses. So finally, his family's broken down. Oh, yeah. By the way, another runner-up is Nicole Kimmel and the kid go. Just because I hated that kid, I want to punch him in the face, Martin. She lets him go. I'm like, God damn it, when she tells him, like, I just let him go. And he's like, what? Yeah. Like, the only time I was on his side, it was in that moment. no.
I agree.
So those two are my top three. But yeah, the ending of the movie. Before we go to the nail, I don't want to forget this point I was going to talk about. What do you think of the, and I think this is more like character development and other things, the way they have sex.
The way they have, you mean
the movie almost couple? Opens that way. Like within the first 10 minutes, you see how the, sure. their lives are in
oh,
general.
Like she's dead.
Like she takes off her clothes, she pretends just... to be dead on the bed, and he just goes to town on her. Ideally, right? That's what he does. We don't see a lot of it. We just see the
well, beginning. I mean, it explains a lot of from what we've been talking about,
yeah.
where this guy just. Like he just uses everything he has to his disposal. Nobody's an actual person to him. Everything's a tool for him.
Yeah.
So like for him, it's just like you're my image. That's how I want you. I don't want you to be talking. I don't even want to hear you breathing. Like I just want to be able to do this because I need it. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It doesn't make sense in the beginning.
And so,
but it does make sense after.
On the little deep cut for my real life, but part of my other podcast I do SOS. ghost-radio.com. We changed so many names, actually. I don't even know what it's called. But if you research SOS-radio.com, you can find it. That show, we did Nevada Trip, remember last year? Or this year, fuck.
this year, yeah.
One of our episodes, we visited a brothel. And the main guy at the brothel was telling us a lot of these backstories, and he had some interesting stories. One of them was about this man who tried to sue the brothel for because he was very specific. His specification was that he wanted the girl to be as dead as possible, pretend to be dead. He wanted to, as close as he can, fuck a corpse, right? And his lawsuit complained that he went all out for it, didn't win, but he went all out for it, is that she wasn't dead enough. She didn't pretend enough. Like, it wasn't to his satisfaction. And I didn't think I would ever watch a movie that would make me understand that on some level, but I think this movie kind of does a little bit. If that's the persona it takes for someone to do this. I'm not saying he talks the same way Colin Farrell does or he's a surgeon. I'm not saying any of that, obviously. Yorgos Lanthimos is his own man. But I feel like the idea of a tool and using it to your own means and having it only work within your touch and your movements, feel like maybe that's part of this.
Yeah.
And that just made me think of that just now. So I'm not saying it's a fully well thought out idea, yeah. but it reminded me of it. And now let's get to the ending.
You said you got really mad about, you were saying earlier, that the scene is the way he chose.
I mean, not only, I mean, this is the best this guy can swallow his pride, which he didn't really do, is that he lets fate decide, even though it's like fate that's kind of, if you buy the reason that Morton's saying anyway, if you buy the whole conceit of the movie, then fate's already doing this, bro, so just pick one. But whatever. He lets fate decide by spinning in a circle. He does a few test drives, so I guess to be really dizzy. He spins in a circle. He has a family in a triangle area and in the living room at the house. And he shoots until he hits one. That was cringeworthy for me.
Yeah, it's pretty cringeworthy.
Because of how spineless in his prideful shit ways he is. And that's such a weird thing to say.
Well,
because
I think
the man,
he can just cop out of it. In the end, is like, well.
I really thought he was going to cop out and they're all going to die. We're going to see the process. I'm like, shit.
Yeah,
which is
I thought
also
that
really
too.
Fucked up. But,
I what I thought was just like, I thought he was going to come up with an explanation towards the end and be like, I did this the best way I could possibly do this, like this way, you know, I didn't have to choose, and in the end, it was only going to hurt his feelings.
Yes. Yeah, fuck his feelings.
It's almost like he can justify his decision by doing it this way.
But this way, the movie ends.
Live with himself.
Movie ends. Do these people live with themselves?
It's a good question. I say 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3 live with themselves?
Yes.
And you're saying that's a daughter and a wife?
Yes. Women are stronger than men.
Because, I would say Steel Magnolias taught us that. Have you seen that movie?
A long time ago.
Well, that was like the ending conceit. Yeah. All the men are crying, the women are like, so strong and good. Anyway, okay, I'm with you there. Is there another reason? Is it because, like, will they shun him for the rest of their lives? Did they gain power in the dynamics of that family that they didn't have?
They gained realization of how unimportant his role is.
Or less important it should be, right?
Something or like less that. Important it should be.
I think I'm leaning towards that one.
Yeah.
And I like that idea. But that's also, is that far-fetched for us to think? Yorgos Lanthimos does not make,
I don't know,
like, satisfying, valuable. I mean, he does make valuable points of view.
In the end.
But he always goes dark for these endings.
In the end, art is art, right? And I can take it one way and you can take it the other.
True. I'm just saying. But like the end of The Lobster is fucked up and dark.
Sure.
I mean, that whole silence, it could be anything.
Yeah. Well, the end of this movie is...
Also, I feel like it could be anything. I feel like...
Yeah, but at least we're getting something out of it.
So do you feel like this was a better ending than letting them all die or him committing suicide, they all die from the bad karma? What do you think?
No, I think in the end, whatever we got was going to be his dumb decision. And whatever... Yeah. And
I feel like we appreciate this movie more as we talk about it.
We are a little bit more. I think we are a little bit more.
I'm giving it credit now.
But at the same time... like
give it a half star more.
Half star more.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore. But we want to say that his decision was whatever he ended up choosing.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it didn't matter how he chose it.
Right,
he was gonna come up a reason to justify himself for it.
Yeah, I feel like that's true. I feel like that. I feel like that's the right answer. I can't give you another one. I feel like that's right. I didn't think about it that way. I should say I never worded it that way in my head. But now that you say it, it feels right to me.
You're welcome.
I like that. No, thank you. That's why we're here. I like it. I think this movie.
Sorry that my
more,
voice is
even
like
this movie is fucking dour.
Here, but yeah.
This movie's hard to watch, and it has a lot less comedy than his other movies.
Not that you have to have comedy.
No, but I'm used to that.
But yeah,
you know, like it's hard to see an Adam Sandler movie with like
Punch Drunk Love is a really good movie because it's dark comedy.
Right.
You know.
He also did another weird adult comedy esque movie this year. It was really good.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying people don't do all type. But I'm used to one size. Okay, cool. So that's is that it for?
Right? I think
that's it. I think we're good. Find it on streaming or renting somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not streaming anywhere, but you can rent it on iTunes and shit. The Killing of Sacred Deer by Yorgos Lanthimos. We kind of recommend it now, but not really. Just watch it once, but pay attention.
Yeah, I'm not gonna watch this movie again.
Oh, me either. Yeah. I'm done. that is it for that review. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we will review our second film, a much more uproarious, more fun, entertaining adventure film called Jumanji. Welcome to the Bloody Jungle. Stay with us.
Ow! Where's the rest of me?
Oh my God, Fridge?
Yeah, I'm Fridge. Who are you?
It's me, Spencer.
Who is she?
Martha?
Why am I wearing half a shirt and short shorts in the jungle?
I think we got sucked into Jumanji and we become the avatars we chose.
So that means
Bethany?
Holy Bethany, don't look at it!
I'm an overweight, middle-aged man.
Well, I don't have my Claritin, and all I see around here is pollen.
Well, I don't have the top 2 feet of my body.
Damn, that is a man right there. Don't cry, don't cry. Don't cry, it's gonna be okay.
Four high school kids discover an old video game console and are drawn into the game's jungle setting, literally becoming the adult avatars they chose. What they discover is that you don't just play Jumanji, you be it. No, it says you must survive it. To beat the game and return to the real world, they'll have to go on the most dangerous adventure of their lives. Well, discover what Alan Parrish left 20 years ago. Why is this there anyway? And change the way they think about themselves. And my God, they say more. This plot ruins the whole movie, essentially.
Oh, is that like
the last
IMDb
sentence
or whatever?
Yeah, the last sentence ruins everything, basically.
It's like a movie preview, except like the trailers that you always see. Like, oh, well, why am I even going to watch the movie?
At least this proves that it is a sequel. It isn't like a remake or anything. It's a legit sequel. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Better than Jumanji 2. So I'll give it credit for that.
That is true, yes.
There's a Jumanji 2.
No.
Better than naming it Jumanji 2. Yeah.
Like the...
Yeah. Jumanji 2, The Return.
Right, the thing 2, the thingening. You know, shit like that.
The Jumanji.
We have a guest star. A guest star? No, well, we're not stars ourselves. A star, a guest.
Maybe a circle, more of a circle?
Yeah, a guest triangle.
Triangle.
Well, yes.
There's three of us. Guest
Matt, you've been here before.
I have.
What was the last thing you did? And close it to your mouth. I know, that's what she said. Yeah, that's funny. Okay.
I don't know. It was a long time ago. It was a couple years ago now.
I don't remember last week, but I remember not it was 2 years ago.
It was before Guantanamo, right?
I don't know.
I think
yeah, he was in a secret black site being tortured. That's right.
Right.
Which what was the movie he was
in? Is not secret at all. We all know about it.
We all know about it.
It was a movie that we all went to the theaters and saw like together.
I'm trying to remember. Was it for this podcast or was it for the old podcast?
It might have been the old podcast.
Wow. So to most listeners, you are new then.
It's been a minute.
I'm new.
Most of our listeners actually came on from the new stuff. Not like they're not like remnants from the old stuff. So
okay.
Most of our listeners. So I guess that's the new listener, Matt. And his credentials are that he just he's our friend and we watch movies together. And that's really the end of his credentials
that's
that
like
we need.
Literally it.
Yeah. But that's all of us, really.
Sometimes he has good opinions.
Sometimes. Right. And they'll be better than another person that we almost always have. Oh, rhymes with puke.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about Jumanji. What did you think, Mr. Guest Host, of Jumanji?
I thought it was overall it was good. Better than I expected. My one regret is I was like, man, I really should have probably watched the first Jumanji movie somewhat recently. That way I could – because I guarantee they probably had a couple throwback lines in that Jumanji movie that went like way over my head.
Hmm. Okay. Are you a fan of the first? And how big, if you are?
I haven't seen the first one since I was a kid.
Oh, like when it came out?
No, not when it came out. I mean, I my parents, I think, have it on like VHS tape somewhere buried in their basement. But it's been – many, many years.
Many,
at least 15 years.
It came out, what, 90 something? I'm sure I could look it up right now, but...
Probably 96.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, there you go.
That makes sense. Dang, is that why they chose that year?
That's one of the references in the movie.
Yeah, maybe.
No, that makes sense. Ralph, what's your thoughts on this?
I'll look it up real quick.
Yeah.
I kind of a soundboard for here is, yeah, it was definitely way more... 95 it came out. Way more interesting than I thought it was going to be. A lot more... fun, but at the same time, not as many references as I thought. I saw the original Jumanji maybe a month or two ago. It was on TV like every day for like a week straight.
Oh, yeah.
And I would catch like little pieces of it. And then one day I just sat down and watched the whole thing and I was like, fuck it. It was fun. There was I liked the cast overall. I think they worked really well together. I actually enjoyed The Rock's performance very well, very much.
You mean Dwayne Johnson? He took out The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
The Rock. Johnson.
No, he even took that out.
He
remember?
Took that out.
It went. There was a degree.
There was a degree.
When he first started acting, it was The Rock. Yeah. And then it was Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
And now it's just Dwayne Johnson. Yeah.
Like, he fucking planned this shit.
Right. Yeah, of course he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dwayne. Mr. Johnson. Dwayne. Yeah, I liked his performance because he... plays like himself.
He has to play a dorky teenager inside of a big man suit.
Inside of a big man suit, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Other than that, it was fun. It was a fun movie to watch.
For sure. I'm in agreement. It's like a step above higher than like a movie of the week because those are much more forgettable maybe. And maybe this one I will forget too and that'll be fine because it's an entertaining movie and entertain me in the 2 hours or however long it is that it bought the ticket for. So... And it did a better job than most movies. A lot of the suck fest of the summer, you know, or last summer. I think last summer was worse than this summer, but whatever it is, not going to break any records, but it was fun. And as far as remake sequels or requels or C-makes they make. Jesus, how old are we? Well, I know I'm older. That's for sure. It was fun. All the attention and heart is on its sleeves. You know exactly where it's going to go. At least I did. Right? I mean, it's predictable, right?
Went on a little too long for my taste, but yeah.
I wager the worst parts about it were the non-Jumanji parts.
100% correct.
So the bookends of this movie.
The beginning of the end. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, right when I was asking myself, why did you just go already? Just get there. I don't need to know why you're in detention.
Yeah. But in that sense, it reminded me more of like a mid-90s movie or like late-90s movie where that was like...
That's true.
It's like very...
Like Pagemaster, it takes like 20 minutes for it to get in.
I've never even seen Pagemaster, really.
Well, I'm aging myself on that one, so...
Yeah, but there's a... Because that feels almost like where it was geared towards like older teenagers, basically, where they've got like the setup where they... do the setup in the beginning, then the middle, and then they got like the sappy end to it. It just felt like one of those 90s movies.
That's true. Well, I didn't tell you this before. This is me being a bad host. We don't give spoilers away, even though it is obvious. So let's just save that for a bit. just in case we accidentally say something. Oh, remember that part at the third act where no. What else? Yeah, I would agree. It feels 90-ish, but it also feels like, because there's a mix of that. There's a few movies every year that come out that kind of feel formulaic. This one feels, you're right, about as formulaic. Maybe you guys feel like it's more like an ode to the original, because that's a 90s movie too.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel like it's trying to do that more, or is it just playing by the numbers? Like, how do we feel about that? Like,
that's a Ralph answer, because I haven't seen Jumanji.
Right, right, you haven't years. Seen it in a while, right, right. Well, take it from me, it's very formulaic also. Yeah.
Yes and no. It's not necessarily an ode to it.
I mean, both have very different themes. I'm not saying that.
But. Sure, yeah. I guess the reason being is that our main cast in the original was like adults for the most part. And then in the... And then they finish with the bookends of them being kids, but they go back to adults. It's really weird.
Okay.
And then this one, it's just how it ends and how it, like, we kind of know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
It's kind of very, it's very obvious from the beginning of the movie.
Okay. We never said who acts in this movie. We made, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, of course. Karen Gillian or Gillian? Gillian, right?
Gillian.
Okay. Who started in The IT Crowd, right? Is that her starting stuff?
No, I don't think she, that's not her.
That's not her?
No, she's,
a different British actress with red hair.
She's from Doctor Who.
No, I know, but she was famous before that too. Kind of, yeah. Like somewhat famous.
I don't know where though.
Okay. Well, it's fine. Kevin Hart and Jack Black, those are the top four, right? Yeah. And then Rhys Darby's in it for a bit. Bobby Cannavale, who always plays a bad guy in movies.
He does.
He's from, you know, Boardwalk Empire, right? You've seen him in that?
Yeah.
He's in, he's great in season 3 of Mr. Robot. Plays a, not even, like a fixer, not a bad guy, but like a fixer. Okay. And he's really good. I mean, he's chewing scenery.
Yeah.
But he's good. And I think the best stuff about this movie is the... is how these actors are playing characters that are not themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Isn't one of the Jonas Brothers in the movie?
Jonas Brothers? Yeah. I could look for a last name named Nick Jonas?
Yeah,
is that
Nick
him?
Jonas, yeah.
Is that supposed... That's Alex? That's the fifth character?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, look at you.
I didn't...
yeah. Way over. Leave it to Ralph. Oh, was that a Jonas Brother?
All right.
Is it one of the Hanson brothers? And that's all back. That's the most earliest boy band recollection I got.
Yeah.
So Hanson. So you got like five boy bands ahead of me, Rob.
Yes.
At least. So you're hip. You have two hips. And
it's
you're
hip to be square.
He's hip. He's with it.
He's with something. The best. There's a bunch of things here. Like the whole point is, The Rock is playing a nerdy guy, because the nerdy version counterpart, the real Spencer, is not The Rock. He doesn't look like The Rock, doesn't build himself up like The Rock. He's not strong or fearless or brave. And likewise, you know, Fridge, strange name. I guess I understand why he's called Fridge, because he's probably big at the fridge.
There's also a reference to a very famous defensive player in the Bears, because his name was The Fridge.
I don't really? Get it.
Oh.
Just
kidding. His name was The Refrigerator, and they called him Fridge.
Did you get it?
Yeah.
Fucking sports geeks.
You're welcome.
That's all you are to me. But thank you for clarifying, because I was gonna reach into Little Giants.
Going somewhere.
Little Giants, the girl in that movie is called Icebox. So I thought this was the next step is a fridge.
That's interesting.
The only connection I can make with fridge.
Well, I found it for you.
So thank you. What was your favorite weird? What was your favorite like counter acting in this movie? I mean, I feel like Jack Black has played a role like this, but never like this, so I can't. No, I can't define
it. He did.
Guy.
He played it in the Vietnam movie, the one Ben Stiller.
Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Oh, does he play a girl or something?
Well,
not like a girl, but like,
because all the Tropic Thunder, it's all like four that are like actors playing actors.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Actors, so he's on. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, it's actors playing actors. And then one guy takes it too far, and it's an actor playing an actor playing an actor.
Like method, like super method
super
or something.
Method, yeah,
something okay.
Bullshit.
I should really watch this movie. It's on my queue.
You've never seen Tropic Thunder?
No, I never seen it.
Oh, well, that's why I thought Jack Black was perfect for this, because he's literally done a role like this before.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Jack Black for sure knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
With his character.
He plays a hot teen girl who Instagrams and has the selfie stick, right? That we open up with that, I think, with her.
I mean, we open up with her taking a picture like, I just woke up. Bitch, you've been awake.
And no bitch, you set up the whole shot.
Right. Hashtag no filter, yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess she didn't use a filter, although she probably would have anyway. Yeah, so it's funny because I would have said like Jack Black's perfect for that role, not because of that movie, because I haven't seen it, but because of this other movie called Bernie. Have you seen Bernie?
No.
Where he played.
That is a more recent movie, though.
Yeah, no, but not by much,
2011.
I
looked up Jack Black. I'm curious.
No, I know that, but it's more recent than Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder came out the year The Dark Knight came out. Because I remember that year, people were coming out of those two movies.
2006, 2007?
2008.
Oh, okay.
Turning that old. Holy crap.
Yeah, yeah. You saw that in theaters. Yeah, yeah. So I thought that he was perfect for that because he's done weird roles like that too and other stuff that reminds me of he's playing off real people, but he gives his own little spin to it. Anyway, this is he's really great. He's my favorite probably, but The Rock also keeps up in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree.
And his chemistry with Kevin Hart is making me want to – well, at least it's making me curious about Central Intelligence, which I think you've seen, Ralph.
I have.
And I didn't want to see it. Because I hate Kevin Hart usually.
You don't like Kevin Hart?
And I don't like really those kind of comedies in general.
Is it just because he's annoying?
He's really annoying.
Okay.
His voice grates me almost. Almost grates me. Now, he didn't grate me in this movie because everyone else was also really good. So, like, they mesh well. But trust me, if they didn't mesh well, I'd be complaining about that.
Yeah.
But usually, my brain hurts when I see him and hear him.
Oh, okay.
Especially hear him. Okay. But do we have a favorite? And what's like your favorite chemistry about this movie? The favorite duo? Because I know there's a bunch of duos. You know, they have a lot of relationships in this movie. I'll start with you, Maddie.
That was kind of my thing too. Is Jack Black? Like right when I saw it, because it kind of reminded me of Tropic Thunder. But also, it's almost like a return kind of for Jack Black. Because I was just looking up his movies, and he's done like a lot of smaller movies. But I mean, he did Goosebumps, which is. Yeah, obviously, like a movie theater one.
Yeah, he plays R.L.
But that was like an okay one. But the last like real movie he did, it was like 2015 was Goosebumps. 2015 was some indie movie called The D-Train, which I'd never heard of.
Even I don't know that
2014
one.
2014 was Sex Tape, which he had like a small uncredited part in it. And then 2011, he was in The Muppets.
The remake?
As a cameo.
Or whatever.
And then he's in Bernie, was like basically his last like real...
His last starring role.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't he still play music?
Probably. He probably does Tenacious D. I don't know if he's released any.
He must,
CDs or anything lately.
I mean, he's like a jack of all trades kind of actor.
Yeah.
Where he's like Patton Oswalt, where like, if he's not doing a movie, he's like doing a children's show somewhere. You'll never see it because you don't have children. Or he'll write a book or something. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Exactly like the next movie coming up, according to this, is Kung Fu Panda 3. So
he's black jack of all trades.
No, just came.
Oh, yeah, that is the last voice acting, I guess he did.
Yeah.
Because he's the panda.
Right. Yeah, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so he did that right before panda. This movie.
That's his Bourne identity. You know how Matt Damon has the Bourne series as a fallback when he wants money? Jack Black has a Kung Fu Panda series.
I guess so.
Yeah, that
and
is true.
Mike Myers has Shrek.
Yeah, Shrek.
Some of these actors have all these things to fall back on.
Sure.
Tom Cruise has Mission Shrek Impossible.
I'm pretty sure he still makes a lot of money from Shrek.
Oh, yeah. He must. Yeah. No way he would keep doing that. Well, maybe he would. I have no idea.
Wakes up and checks his bank account and just thinks like, oh, look at all that Shrek money.
Right.
He has a bank account which is Shrek, called Shrek. One Austin Powers and then one is called The Rest.
He's like rolling.
The Rest.
Right.
The Rest is his savings account.
His Rest, yeah. I think, you know, since there isn't, would we agree to say that there isn't a whole, like, a lot of depth to this movie? Or is there some hidden depth that I'm missing that you guys want to explore?
I mean, no, besides the relationships that they're trying to mend and create.
Okay. I mean, we all agree it's just like a fun adventure movie, right? Nothing beyond that. Let's get into spoilers just so we can talk freely. So spoilers for Jumanji, the Welcome to the Jungle, starting now.
Black Mamba.
Okay, trust one another and never blink. Never blink.
You guys, I think it's a staring contest.
What are you talking about?
Think about it. Never blink.
Guys, who's good at staring and not blinking?
I'm amazing at it.
Then this is your moment.
Just say when.
All right, cool. So, predictable, right? Did you guys, we were talking with my brother Danny, right? He was next to me, so I couldn't tell you guys in the theater. my first thought was that Bobby Cannavale was the fifth guy.
He went evil.
Like he went evil somehow and
that's
stole the jewel.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
They didn't, and they went more traditional. Yeah. And it makes sense. It's also more satisfying emotionally by the end. So right. I get that.
And they also did the typical, like, oh, we're going to kill
him. And he turned out to be Tom Hanks' son.
Yeah.
Right?
That's Tom Hanks' son, yeah.
Yeah, Colin Hanks.
Yeah, Colin Hanks.
Yeah, from Fargo. Yeah, so what did you guys think of his introduction? Did you expect him? Did you expect him that way? Things like that.
No, because I was expecting the villain to be it, too.
Were you dissatisfied?
No, I wasn't dissatisfied. I mean, it kind of makes sense. Especially because they did throw it out there, even in the beginning, that you know that character and his name was the pilot. So it made sense when they introduced the fifth guy. Of, oh, pilot. Oh, bam. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
No, and it made sense, too. Like, the mechanics of this game, which is... feels like an SNES game, but also feels like any game because the roadblocks for any game is kind of feel similarly. Plays into that you need all the characters.
Yeah,
and it's that's also an homage a little bit to the old one. From what I remember, is that the problem that stopped that skipped all those years in the original Jumanji is that the next person didn't take their turn, right? And then two players introduced themselves, so they took their turn, and they had to wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, ideally, for the other person
just
to come
like
in.
That, yeah.
Like, exactly. So this was the same. You have to wait till five players are on the fucking field
right.
in order to together do something. Which plays right. differently than the
I will say something,
original.
Though. The original Jumanji is what world feels a lot more dangerous than this one.
Yes, more scary.
Yeah.
I didn't see no tarantula, son.
I didn't see a lot of things.
Giant
yet.
Spiders? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was just spiders that were giant. Well,
the plant life also.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The plant life in the original Jumanji, yeah. where like it eats up cars and it just grows everywhere. And just like it's kind of like almost alive. And it just takes up
man,
things.
I totally forgot about that part. Yeah. Right.
I don't remember shit about the first one.
You should watch it again now that I remember that. That's a really cool scene. I like
what
that
got
scene.
Me, though. I don't know. Ralph could probably answer this. Cause, but this one, alternate timelines. Alternate timelines. Because... 2006, and he went all the way back to 1996, 20 years ago.
Right,
his alternate
and then
timelines
grew back up. So,
but that's exactly what happens in the original Jumanji.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
see.
Yeah, but that's different though. So yes, it is because the kids don't remember in the original Jumanji that they played the game, and this one they do remember.
Right, but the difference is because they went back in time. The kids weren't born yet.
Oh, you're saying they went back in time to 96 as opposed to him, the kid, going forward in time to 2016?
Yes.
Wow. Really? That makes sense.
Yeah. So this one, they went back because the original people who started the game or whatever, they weren't. But these guys weren't born or whatever.
So although, this problem with Jumanji, the world of it, came in 96 then.
Yeah.
Right? And it's only been a few months for that kid, so this jewel was stolen for a totality of whatever time they're in.
Sure.
Time warp for a few months. And somehow the jungle got safer in that time. Like, do you think if the jewel was always there and you got stuck in Jumanji, there'd be more, like, plant life going crazy at you? Like, everything will work more, you think?
I don't know. It also seemed like when they pulled out at the end of the map or just not the map, but the world of Jumanji, it did look like it was a lot bigger than the area they were in. It was like they were just like in this small area. But the
kind of like Westworld. They were just in the general vicinity,
exactly.
the play okay zone.
Yeah.
But if you want to get the really fucked up shit, you got to go on the outskirts.
Yeah, it did look like that.
Yeah, Westworld's reference.
But
yeah.
also it's like...
Season 2.
That's because like the guy probably lived that long and there probably wasn't so much craziness because it's still technically a game, so it's probably still some kind of set of rules. Like, dude was hiding out camping in some open area, like he was saying, where there's no mosquitoes. But that's probably because he's set up there and the game's just, like, going as normal until something else happens.
Did we buy that, by the way? Not that anyone could survive there for three lives, or two lives, really, because you died twice, the third one I'm gone. Did we buy that, the way these people, like, the comparison between this one and the last one is that the 90s Jumanji felt more dangerous. The shit that came out of that board was way more dangerous. But they had one life. And this one feels like the threat of death is bigger in this new remake. Or sequel than it is in the old one, even though it's safer because they have more lives. And also, they're afraid that if they lose their last life, they're going to die. Did you feel like they were going to die had they lost their last life? I mean, they felt that. Do we feel like that's what would have happened?
I don't know.
You don't think the game would bring other players in to save
Jumanji? Yeah. I don't know if... I don't think it would have, like, booted him out. Maybe it would have given him some kind of, like, option to continue or something like that.
Insert more quarters.
I just don't see anybody dying being that bad.
I mean, they were afraid of it, for sure.
Right. Like, I think if they all died, they all died. But I think if one died and they succeeded, that person gets to come back.
Hmm. Or, like, if... because they separated it into levels. So maybe if the person died and then they beat that level and got to the next level, then...
Yeah, it's
maybe
weird.
They'd like respawn or something.
Yeah, did those things feel like levels or just feel like things to do, like a checklist?
Well, they segmented or they hinted it in the movie that they segmented it into like levels. Because and as you can see in the movie, like the map got more and more revealed every time Jack Black was looking at it.
Right, words appeared whenever there was like a stage, right? Or like a new place. But they didn't feel like levels to me. They just felt like you're doing errands and you have to go to the post office first before you can wrap the package you're going to buy it in order to send it in the mail, whatever.
Well, yeah, that's your typical RPG stuff. You can technically make it anywhere. Yeah. Right. But if you don't have certain things done, you're not unlocking certain
RPG thing. I guess you're right. You guys are right. You guys play more games than I do, for sure. I don't play many RPGs, and I haven't in forever. But, yeah. Action-wise, do we like it? I mean, I think it was pretty competent. Nothing was out of place. The action was pretty solid. It wasn't, like, great. It wasn't, like, fucking... You know, wow, what's that great Chinese movie?
John Woo. Or
yeah, you're right. It's not, it ain't choreographed to art, but it isn't bad. You know, Michael Bay, like, where the hell is the shooting coming from? Where is the editing? Like, yeah, so I felt that way. You guys felt that way?
Yeah.
You're competent.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't anything too flashy, but at the same time, there's some cool stuff.
As gamers yourselves, because in this game, you know, in this game, movie, the main character, Spencer, who plays a hero, of course, his power beyond being the Rock is that he knows games and the rest don't. That's the whole point. That's what makes him so valuable in the beginning, at least. He tells people what NPCs are and shit like that. Yeah. Is there anything you wanted him to explore or be curious or ask about or discover that you would have, you two being gamers?
Oh, yeah. He should have definitely had a lot more common sense. Like, I was actually getting mad. Like, even when he was asking, like, nice. Nigel, the NPC, like, dude, you can't fucking ask him some fucking questions? Like, he kept being like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. Like, you just went on this rant about how you play video games all the time and crap. Like, you can't even ask this guy, like, simple questions. Like, where are we?
This is my buddy. Like,
idiot.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% agreement. Also, it's learning how to skip things. Like, for me, I was just like, oh, like, can I avoid that fight? I don't do it, right? Walk away from it. Or can I go around this area and not go through that pit of doom or whatever?
Yeah.
All right, let's fucking figure out.
How open world is this?
They didn't even ask the kid any questions. The kid's like, oh, you know, come with me or whatever.
Because
Where are we? What do we do? Like, come on.
Everything felt really open world.
Yeah. And then, but at the same time, also, there's this big video games like to do this where they make something important. Like, it's a rush. You feel rushed. No. Like, I'm never rushing a video game. You know why? You want to know why? Because a fucking video game. Like, in the end of that character, that NPC, follow me. Yeah, okay. I'm going to go do my own shit and explore. Yeah. Then I know where you are. Right. I'll follow you. Don't worry about it, buddy.
Yeah, like, see, I didn't think of that stuff. Because
like when they get to the Clover part, right? Or the Black Mamba.
Right.
That scene. Like, once they got there, I'm like, I know where this place is. Let me go check around. Do I need supplies? Do I need this? Do I need that?
Oh, my God. Supplies. I thought of that. I thought of supplies.
Just start getting into it. Oh, maybe let me check that backpack. Yeah. What is actually in this
backpack?
Which
is very convenient, like, when you need
never
something.
Never showed anything that was in the backpack. It's like Kevin Hart's got this big-ass backpack, and he pulled out, like, two things out of it the whole damn time.
I think only when you need it.
And then they were all bizarre, and they were all talking about, like, oh, I got to eat food. And one character had, like, one bite of fucking food.
Right. That was bad.
And it was like, I thought they wanted to eat, and then Kevin Hart exploded, and they're like, oh, well, now we're going to follow this NPC, like you're saying. Like, okay, well, I'm going to eat first, because we're
like,
supposed
hold on,
to be
NPC.
Getting healthier or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, what's the rush? Well, you know, there are bad guys.
That's, like, one of the pet peeve things. Not a pet peeve, but, like, they went as far as giving them, like, basic, you know, little character sheets and lives, but then, like, where's their health meter and stuff? And if they don't have a health meter, it's fine, but they had to have some kind of anything, stamina meter, whatever. But it's like they kind of went in, dabbled into the video games, but you could tell it was very obvious that it was a whole bunch of writers and shit that really didn't know anything.
By the way, 4 or 5 writers in this fucking movie. By the way. Here's one major problem I have with it. That's like if it wasn't a problem, it would create a much better version of this movie. Is that Bobby Cannavale, the main bad guy with the weird eye, controls animals when he wants to. I thought that he put Jumanji in danger. Now he did, but it's more like the obstacles these people have to pass through is like levels in a game, right? But they're all set up by him. Like, they're his guards they have to pass through in order to get to that plane, right? Or the hangar, right?
Yes.
And then they're his biker gang people, yes. Right? So that's what the problem is. If the obstacles were Jumanji in nature as, like, the setting or different bad guys maybe or, like, a turf war or more animals, like the Jaguars was a cool part, then I would be questioning – Who is this otherworldly character coming in to take Jumanji for himself? Like, what is he special? Like, how is he a threat to Jumanji if he is a manifestation of Jumanji? And then, if that's the case, and it's like, oh, Oscar's just a villain in the game, then why would Jumanji create the game? Like, why is Jumanji existing? It feels like it abolishes that question and doesn't explore any of the ideas of that by saying that he is the main villain in a game you're playing. Instead of saying he is a hero that invaded this game that you're playing. So I think that distinction is big, and they fucked it up, in my opinion, for that reason. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
I don't know. I don't really follow, just because that was the entire game. It was him. Like, that's why he didn't like do more with the animals or take control of the game, because he was a variable of the game. Kind of like The Matrix, where like all the enemies and stuff have like a set – they have set variables unless they're like – You know, like Agent Smith was a...
Well, that's the whole point. That movie is interesting games, because Agent Smith goes off the rails, right? The main villain of that movie.
Of what?
Matrix, yeah.
He goes off the rails of his set boundaries.
But Jumanji, there is no going off the rails. Even the villain is probably operating within his set boundaries.
Then why even exist? I mean, the game adapts from a board game to a SNES game or whatever it is.
Atari,
my bad.
Looked like Broadbox, but...
Yeah, maybe. Like it adapts to, I assume, to bring more players, and I thought it adapted in order to bring more players in to save Jumanji, like, as if it mattered. Then why does the game exist?
Yeah, that's weird.
It throws me off. That's what I'm saying. Like that's what throws me off. I get that he is what he is, Bobby Cannavale, the main bad guy, but I understand his purpose. I just wish his purpose was not from the game itself or something different. Like, you know, this place could be riches. If anyone could capitalize on this place, forget about it. It could be horrors for the real world or other worlds. Yeah. It could be interesting, is my point. I'm not saying it's Wrinkle in Time, which I haven't seen or read, but I heard it's insane about the meta dimensions and shit.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I asked myself was I would just play with everything. I would like try to stab myself a little bit and see what kind of damage I could take. I would see if it was pixelations and anything. I would play with the world if I knew I was in a video game. I would just be playing with everything. I wouldn't do anything, actually. I wouldn't succeed in any mission because I'd just be focusing on all the details. But that's my problem in video games, is I never pay attention to the bigger picture. Do we like the Jumanji OG reference? Did you get the reference, Maddie?
I don't know.
Remember the hut that the plane guy was in? The place where he lived?
Yeah.
That was they had the name of Robin Williams' character.
Oh, okay. I figured that as much, but I didn't really like. No, I didn't.
I think that's a much better way of doing it than, you know, like Baywatch, another remake sequel, right? That I think fails. I think we reviewed it kind of poorly. We tried to make it our best, but it wasn't a great movie. Also starring The Rock. That one did it worse because they kept bringing references upon references, and they brought in the actors at some points, right? At crucial points sometimes. And this one, it's just in passing. It's like a scribble on a
yeah. But honestly, cabin. That's probably because he's dead. Like, well, if Robin Williams is alive, they probably would have had at least a cameo.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It probably would have ruined it, right? If Robin Williams was still kicking.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? So,
it's kind of possible. But I mean, some movies do a really good job where Robin Williams could have been like an NPC cameo where he could have just, you know, said something.
He could have been Reese Darby. I can see him as Reese Darby, right?
Yeah, maybe.
In this movie, right?
Right.
Totally. They're both comedian actors. I don't know, afraid that's all I got on this movie. You guys have anything else?
I personally didn't like the reference. Just for the fact that he wouldn't have been in this world because it's a different world from the original Jumanji that we know, because it's an adapted game, like the game changed itself.
Right.
And its nature completely from the original Jumanji.
So they're saying that from when he played as a board game till when he escaped in 1985, the game adapted and like he had three lives suddenly. Like, what's going on? And, right? The kind of.
Yeah, it's weird. That it changes a lot of things.
Yeah. I agree with that. Anything else? Any other points?
No.
No. Good movie. Probably wouldn't see it again. I wouldn't. But
I guess. I mean, if it's on TV.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the original Jumanji.
For nostalgic reasons, I want to see it again. Okay. But not like to compare or anything. Not that I, obviously my head would still compare them. So anyway, that is it for our review of Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, not Jumanji 2. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our highlight review of the evening. Of course, that little movie called Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Stay with us.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power, and beyond that, something truly special.
Something inside me has always been there. And I was awake. And I need help.
I've seen this raw strength only once before. It didn't scare me enough then. It does now.
Rey develops her newly discovered abilities with the guidance of Luke Skywalker.
Wow.
Who is unsettled. I can't read this. Guys. Who is unsettled by the strength of the powers. Meanwhile, the Resistance prepares to do battle with the First Order. Well, I should say, meanwhile, the Resistance runs away from the First Order. This is Star Wars The Last Jedi. I didn't have to say this is my pick because it was like a no-brainer. Like, it's if I did not pick. Choose this movie for...
You were going to get shot.
I was going to get shot by you guys.
Right. Yeah.
I was going to get mutinied, and you guys were going to
I had a rusty screwdriver that I was going to aim for your kneecap.
Wow.
Wow.
Rusty
it's
screwdriver.
It's pretty specific, I know.
Mm. You gave me rabies on top of a wound.
I had old blue waiting for me.
This is a film written and directed by Rian Johnson, a big fan of ours.
Oh, who's that?
A filmmaker.
Oh, okay.
A big fan of ours?
Well, Raph and I, for sure.
We're big fans of him.
You've seen, we're big fans of him. Did I say that wrong?
Yeah. Wrong. It's like he knows us. And
he knows us. He totally knows us, yes.
Yes, he totally does.
That's what I meant to say. I said it right.
What's up, RJ?
I'm not taking it back. Yeah, we're big fans of him. We've seen all of his movies, I think, right?
I've seen most. I might have missed one.
He's only done three before this one.
Okay, I saw Brick.
You saw Brick?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. You see The Brothers Bloom?
Yes.
You saw Looper, right?
No. Yes.
You never seen Looper?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Okay,
seen
I saw his movies.
Then you guys, all of you have seen all of his movies, as far as I know, anyway. And he's directed a few episodes of Breaking Bad, and I know he's done other side projects, like he's in, I think he's married to Karina Longworth.
Looper was 2012? Holy balls.
Yeah.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, I feel old.
Yeah, a year or two you later are. Is when he got the job for this movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Must have been a nice paycheck.
Yeah, I guess. And it's this movie stars Daisy Ridley, of course, John Boyega, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, Andy Serkis, Lupita Nyong'o, Domhnall Gleeson, Anthony Daniels, Gwendolyn Christie's in this movie. Unfortunately, not very much. Benicio del Toro, Laura Dern, who is making a big year this year. A lot of her roles are great. Kelly Marie Tran is in this movie. Frank Oz is in this movie. Billy Lord. A lot of people, man. A lot of people. Justin Theroux is in one scene in this movie. Do you guys know who that is?
I've heard the name.
In the Monte Carlo scene. Anyway. As always, just in case, even though we know that if you're listening, you have seen this movie by now. We are reviewing this a week after its premiere. So, we're still going to, you know, be conscious on spoilers. So let's get into our initial thoughts first. Luke, let's start with you. You are the Star Wars fanatic out of the three of us.
I guess.
I mean, out of
the
three.
Did you know that Tom Hardy was in this movie?
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was a stormtrooper.
He was a stormtrooper?
Yeah, Tom Hardy, stormtrooper.
I don't know if I believe that. But sure, sure. Why not? You could just walk in on set like, hey, can I be a stormtrooper? Sure.
Fuck yeah, I do the same thing.
I mean, they constantly like putting masks in front of him, right? Bane and yeah. the pilot in Dunkirk. You never see his face in any of these movies. All right, so, Luke, what did you think of this movie, The Last Jedi? Was it lasting?
No, I really enjoyed it. Borderline loved it, you know?
Nice.
Oh, you want more?
Sure, a little bit more.
Okay, yeah. You know, the only reason I'm kind of hesitant is because it's got that Two Tower syndrome. It's the middle movie syndrome, you know, where the first one is all nice and fresh and everything's awesome, but then the second one comes out, it's really good too, but you're like, you know that you're just one away from the last one.
Hmm.
So it's kind of.
But there
like,
isn't a last one. They're making one a year for the rest of our lives, right?
Well, yeah, but for episode 9, you know that's coming out.
Coming out on Hulu.
So,
sorry.
You know, now I'm just more anxious for episode 9.
I'm just going to say this. This is funny because I'm going to give you two examples of trilogies where the middle
Godfather
movie is the better one.
Godfather 2 was the
one. Best. Is that one? Mm-hmm. And Before Sunset.
Never seen them.
You ever seen the Before trilogy?
Nope.
Okay.
Damn, Before Sunset is the better one.
Right? That ending makes that movie infinitely better than any of the other movies.
You're 100% correct.
So, I'm just giving you two examples there. I'm sure that people can think of others. But we gotta stop giving the stigma to these movies. Two Towers, I'm sorry, yeah, Two Towers is the worst one of that trilogy.
But it's still good.
It's still good, right. And
he's not knocking that it's not a good movie,
right.
And that it's the middle one.
Yeah.
I think Empire is the best movie of so far.
Wait, Empire, it does, thank Empire, you. Empire, yeah. Right. Empire is my favorite Star Wars.
I thought you were going
right.
to say
Empire
like,
is
I didn't think of that. Yeah.
To keep the Star Wars references.
Right.
I think Empire is the best. For me, it's the best movie out of all. And
also, the one not directed by Lucas.
To this day, Clone Wars, I still haven't watched the movie from A to Z.
I actually like Clone Wars, but because there's more action in it than Part 1.
Yeah, for sure.
And Part 1 just felt like a very kid movie, and then Part 3 was just like, dude, he's got high ground. Like, come on.
Yeah. I still get, that's annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just annoying.
Right.
Just go higher.
Yeah. So other than that, I mean, I get he's not trying to throw a stigma at it, but it is that middle movie.
Right. No, I'm using him as a starting point for people who say that as a stigma.
It is almost like that sequelitis kind of problem, you know?
Right.
Well, let's think about a trilogy. Indiana Jones. What's the middle movie?
Temple of Doom.
It's a fucking good movie.
I love that movie. I still think the first one's better though, for sure. On that one, that's why I didn't say that one.
Yeah, the first one's really better.
But they're all like different. They're all like the only one, two people connected to all these movies. They're all different adventures. They don't even count the sequels really.
The dog, right?
The dog. Yeah, totally. Right. So what did you think about of this movie?
Mixed feelings. Okay. Definitely leaving during the movie.
Wait until we get to the killing of Sacred Deer. You're gonna talk about mixed feelings there.
I'm already mixed on it. Anyways, so I was watching the movie and I was like, okay, a lot of stuff fell short for me. A lot of stuff I didn't know where it was going, but that's good in a movie that you don't want to know where everything's going.
Right.
What's it called? I don't know if I wanted more cheering or something like big. I was waiting like something. I felt like something was building up, right, in the movie, and nothing came. And I was like, or nothing like too big came or something, right? It was almost like the movie's leading you for this big thing, and then just like, oh no, we're not doing it. And I was like, what the fuck?
That's what episode 9's coming.
Right, exactly. And I was like, what the fuck?
That's basically so
what
weird. Fun. Okay.
So nine death
then
star
I left
system.
The, I left the movie kind of thinking, I was like, man, I don't know if I like this movie that much. And I was like, I thought it was like poor kind of character development, but then like talking about it, I was like, no, it's actually got pretty fucking good character development.
I'm agreeing with that.
And I was like, I'm way off on that. I just don't know why I felt that in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if like the big message of the bigger cliffhangers or whatever, not cliffhangers, but the bigger reveals, that's what I meant to use.
Yeah.
Of the movie, or just like maybe just didn't, I didn't feel them too much, or they didn't feel like they got what they needed or something. I left the movie. But like thinking about it overall at the end, I was like, no, it was still a pretty fucking good movie. And I left over going, I was like, yeah, it's actually really good character development. I had some problem with timing, but I can't complain about that too much.
No, we certainly can. That's timing is editing.
I said too much. Like, right, okay. I will complain about it.
Okay.
But I'm not going to beat it over, you know.
Okay.
Other than that, overall, I did like the movie. I do have the Two Towers vibe of it. Like I said, I like Two Towers a lot. Mm. I think it's the movie that we need, like, because it's a lot of expose and a lot of stuff going on. And in this one, a lot of the stuff I think we get, but it's a, I don't know. I'm still mixed. I like it. I just don't love it.
Okay. My job here is to convince you otherwise.
Please do.
Because I feel like I went to this movie thinking it was going to do an Empire Strikes Back. My biggest problem with Force Awakens is that it did exactly what the fucking New Hope did.
Yeah.
I know it's not exactly,
right.
And I know people have defense on that, and that movie is just meant to be popcorn entertainment, and it succeeds, which is why people love it.
Yeah.
And people, when that movie came out,
sure.
It was like the start of a new thing.
Also,
Disney owns it. It's not going to be prequels, and people were so excited they gave it too much of a bump up from my taste.
I almost kind of wanted it. I didn't see anything for this besides a teaser a long time ago. I knew nothing about
this movie. Oh, yeah. I know very little.
No, I knew nothing going into this movie. Like,
I
try to avoid trailers. I try to avoid stuff like that, you know.
Right.
But I almost feel like I think a trailer might have been better for this. I haven't seen a trailer yet.
I saw the trailer after.
Yeah.
And it misleads you.
Does it?
Things that are like what looks to be like a big spoiler in the movie. Like there's a scene, if you remember, this is towards the beginning of the first
half. That's good though,
it's
right?
It's when Kylo Ren
isn't that good?
Is going to shoot his mother.
Yeah.
And that's there's a voiceover in the background of choosing the, you know, where the what's the main bad guy? Snoke. It's telling him to choose, you know. And those two are completely different scenes. And they don't happen the way that it looks like it's going to happen.
Well, isn't that better?
Yeah, of course. I love that. But so, I didn't see it ahead of because that's trailer spoiled.
Sure.
And they didn't spoil anything from the third act other than we get a quick look-see at the Saw planet. But that's really it.
Okay.
So that was my fear, is that it was going to be Empire, and it was going to be like it's going to end on a sour note, which is why I liked Empire in many ways, because it was just a bold way to do adventure, because, you know, people want a tight story, and they want to leave happy, you know, that's what a movie is for a lot of people, and they don't want to be challenged that way, and I love those movies, so...
But I think what Empire does really great is that it changes the dynamic of who we thought Luke Skywalker was. We think Luke Skywalker is a nobody, and then we find out that, he's not a nobody.
Well, that's the problem that made all the other sequels terrible, is because now everything's about Skywalkers.
Yeah,
everybody's a Skywalker, and it's really annoying.
I think that's what does really well in this movie. Isn't
right. So I'm going to get to that
we'll get
for
to
sure.
Later.
This movie is flips that on its head, flips it on its head after being already flipped on its head by the original genre conventions. And I think that it solves everything. I mean, it solves almost every question I had from the first movie, The Force Awakens, in a way that I didn't think they were going to solve. Some of the answers I didn't even know I wanted until I got it. And then it has a little bit of a setup for the third movie, because all of these movies have setups for the next movie. Even the end of Return of the Jedi has set up for the next movie, because
Rogue One.
They all feel like they have set up. Even Rogue One.
Yeah,
it's a weird prequel sequel thing.
I mean, it's literally the next.
Like, all these movies to me are just one gigantic Fast and Furious thing, or one gigantic Marvel thing.
Yes and no. Like, you can tell
the only difference.
Yes and no. I think there is a big time gap.
There is a difference, though.
Right.
The way they treat these movies are differently. Disney's treating the Star Wars franchise like trilogy segments.
Right.
So it's not one movie. It's the three movie chunks.
Arcs.
Three movie chunks.
They're arcs.
And in Marvel, they do character parts. Yeah. They do one movie a character, a character. Then they bring them all together.
Yeah. Well, I think they're doing arcs.
So doing it
Star
differently
Wars.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then
so we get a like Luke Skywalker arc, we get the
but in the end
Anakin
all these movies
Skywalker
are
arc.
Connected, and they don't feel the first one feels like the first one, and that's it. And after that, the last one, when they stop making them, will feel like the last, and that's it. They all feel like the middle movie to me.
Yeah.
But this movie, I think Rian Johnson, he could have, I knew the part, I thought that was going to end a certain part, and then when it didn't and it kept going, and not in a bad way, although some people did complain about like 70 endings, I loved how it answered and gave this like this immeasurable feeling of both hope and like a good start for like a much more considerable like story, nicely woven character developed story in the third film.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some good stuff. They answered a lot of things happened in this movie that weren't building up. They ended shit here. And they're continuing in a different way for the third film. So I don't feel like it was the Two Towers feel at all. So, but I get why people say that, because we know inherently that there's a third movie. I think that's the problem.
That is a problem.
But there's no way around that. We can't. Sure. What are they going to say? Like, I mean, oh, psych, we're going to make a third one now. I mean, come on.
I still love what they did with it, though. Like,
for sure.
Especially like when, you know, Luke Skywalker, Skywalker says, like, the whole thing just destroys the whole Jedi image and just, like, one's dialogue.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk. I think the training stuff is my favorite parts of the movie. Okay, so we should talk about that then.
Less Rocky Ray's, montage.
Yeah. Let's talk about Ray's, Ray's thing, without spoiling, of course, but Ray's plot. What do we? How do we feel about her? Because
I think she's your most straightforward character developed character. Without saying character twice, right. She's traditionally developed, where okay. She achieves abilities, right, or gets right when she gets the Force or whatever, she awakens, and then she is trying to, you know, control them now, control her Force. Yeah. And know and find purpose as a very traditional thing. Like, you go step by step. Like, I have this, I have that, I'm going this, I'm going that.
Yeah.
In comparison to the rest of the characters, which in the movie, because I think all the rest of the characters are all in weird mixed bag of development.
No, I think they all develop. I just don't think some of them reach that development the way we want them to.
Yeah, no, but I think Rey's just more traditional.
Yeah, definitely.
That we're used to in movies anyways.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, okay. Very much so.
Do you find her plot line the most easier to watch, or the best one, or what?
It's kind of the best one because it's kind of like the progression of it. How she goes from just, you know, someone that has no affiliation with it to, you know, someone that's going to be mastering it.
Well, what's really good about hers also is that what he's just said about the no affiliation with it, it almost feels like she's doing everything on her own. Not only on,
she's got that drive, that spunk,
right? Not only like she's never with anybody in this movie, like, or with most people, should I say? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really like she has Chewie, which is not really there. Like, you know, he's like the driver,
yeah.
And
it's a cab waiting outside,
right? Exactly. So it's interesting, like, to see what's it called? Like, she's does everything on her own because she's always been on her own. And it's almost like she's not really a part of anything.
And the Force Awakens, you start with her pretty much alone.
Pretty much alone.
Scavenger.
Pretty much alone, yeah.
So I agree with you guys. Furthermore, I think that her dynamics with Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill kills it in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And, man,
I think Mark Hamill's done really well for himself since...
Dude, since...
Since his
OG days?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's really good as Luke Skywalker, the master. Luke the master.
Yeah.
Not you, Luke.
Oh.
Luke the master.
The master.
Cool. Yeah, the master.
More like the movie The Master.
Yeah.
I love this performance, and I love how there are some Empire touches for sure, because he is the Yoda of this new generation. He is a little kooky. He's been alone too long. So his funny, the way he acts and reacts to, you know, Rey is... really, it can be really as funny as the puppet is in as Yoda in the Empire Strikes Back when he's training him, and they Rian Johnson does this thing where his writing is clearly on it, because I could tell of his comedic style. Some of it didn't work, but the ones that did work with the cute little, what are they called?
Porgs.
Porg was really funny to me, and Luke Skywalker, my favorite line, probably the funniest one, is when, like, do you feel the Force? Do you feel it? And when she reaches off her arm.
Yeah. He, like, slaps it with the branch or whatever.
Yeah. It was a grass.
Yeah. It was a big leaf or something. Yeah.
That was really funny.
That was really funny.
And I just love how he, we ain't gonna spoilers into all that, but I love how his progression goes. And we ended up getting more of a story out of him than I thought we would.
Yeah.
And I was glad for it. I really didn't think it would be a whole lot of him.
Yeah.
And it became like he was second.
Yeah, there's this weird thing about this movie is that you expect more, I guess, from your main, who we think are the main characters in this movie. But we don't get that. We almost get an even amount of everybody.
Yes.
Or an equal amount, if you want to look at it. There are some people who get a little bit more, but it's very minuscule, the differences. And it's definitely interesting, definitely really cool, instead of just following one person.
And my favorite thing about this whole thing is a further explanation of how the Force works. Like a very detailed feel.
You mean a rewritten explanation of how the Force works?
Maybe it's retconned. I mean, I know.
I mean,
it is retconned from the prequels.
That's what it is.
Because that's like all midichlorians. They don't mention that shit here.
Right, exactly.
That concept died.
Nothing about legacy. Nothing about have to be a Skywalker. Or
anything
like that.
That's the whole thing. That's basically what they're nullifying. Right. They're nullifying everything in that.
And that's a better way to look at it. Because instead of like having, instead of dreaming that you want to be Luke Skywalker, it's like dreaming you want to be the best. It's like a different.
Yeah.
It's a slightly different thing.
Like no one ever was.
Is that Pokemon?
Yeah, that's a Pokemon.
Okay. All right, then. Just like that. No, and that's I love the clarity of it. I love how it manifests into something physical in this world. We're talking about the little black hole. And that's where there's a real Rian Johnson weird scene with mirrors and reflections that we'll get into.
Interesting. You found that weird?
I found it cool, but it's like it's hard. It's like trying to make an answer without words.
I think I got an answer out of that, and it was very easy for me.
Good. We're going to find out. Yeah. So I love that stuff. I really love this stuff. I did not think I would get that much of an explanation. Also, the politics of Jedi and how it was a big mistake to even have a Jedi Council.
Right.
They get a lot of things. Yeah. That's pretty much in the... His thoughts on that is not spoilers. Are his thoughts on that spoilers?
I think so. I think getting on...
I don't know. I mean, I just think he's very anti. I mean, he's hiding for a reason. Yeah. We find out he's a grumpy old guy. He doesn't want a trainer from the get go. Spoilers. But okay, let's go with the B plot stuff then. What did we like or didn't like about any B plot stuff? The addition of this this girl,
Rose.
And, I believe her name is.
Rose and Finn. Yeah.
Yeah, Rose and Finn. Let's go with them.
Well, their tasks. Finn tries to get the hell out of Dodge, and Rose catches him, but then they find out that they're being tracked through hyperspace, so they have to find a way to disable it on their
the
main Imperial cruiser.
I'm curious what happened between Force Awakens and this movie, because suddenly they're on the run, right? And it didn't seem like they were like destroying their Death Star in the Force Awakens led them to. Because I guess by the end of that movie, they knew where the resistance was. And then they had to hightail it out of there. Because even though they blew up the Death Star, they still had these dreadnoughts and shit, right?
Yeah, they have a lot of...
So they were being chased. So it probably isn't a whole lot of time between the movies, right?
Yeah.
Because another thing is that Force Awakens ends with Rey landing on...
Right.
Right, the planet. And then the movie starts with them first meeting. So
right.
That makes sense. But what do we think of Rey and Finn in this movie?
You mean Rose and Finn?
Rose, you're right. Rose Tico is her name. Rose and Finn, how do we feel about their meeting and so on without spoilers? I got a big problem with the spoilers part of them, but otherwise.
Didn't care for her at first.
Okay.
Kind of grew on me, but it felt like useless subplot.
Okay. Yeah. Useless because of how it ends? Is that what you mean?
In a way, and then I just didn't like where it went.
Okay.
I feel he probably could have been used in a better way.
I mean, this connects with the opening of the movie. The opening of the movie is this gigantic war scene. The first war scene that feels like a war scene in Star Wars, right? It's not action. It's like they have... It's basically a World War One thing with bombers coming in and you know having to aim the bombs right. Yeah. And it's a really cool thing.
Right.
And I love how it started with that. And I love how Cocky... What's his name? Poe. And he has a little arc based on that and how Carrie Fisher's character is trying to get him to learn. Mm-hmm. And she demotes him, I think, in that after that scene. So all that's connected to one theme or one lesson. But without spoiling what that is yet, what did you think of all that, Ralph? Because they're all connected, I guess, Finn, Poe, and Rose. Because they all have one mission. They're trying to scramble to save the fleet.
Sure. I have a big problem with... movies that do this, but they feel that everything we're gonna go see, everywhere we go, there has to be some type of connection. Somebody has to know about it so we can get expose about this place. We can't just discover something. We can't just go to somewhere that we don't know and we'll have to wing it when we get there. Rose is from like this place that we go to, for example. So like we happen to know about stuff like that, right? And it becomes like this.
It was too
like
convenient.
There's a tash. Here. It's almost too convenient that it's all happens to be at this place, right?
Okay.
I think Rose was just kind of there, background-ish. Mm-hmm. I thought honestly her character was just like her character just really evolves really rapidly for me because she goes from this person who like doesn't like confrontations at all to manning up in front of everything, like, and just doing, you know, doing things that I think this character wouldn't do.
Okay, that's interesting, because I didn't see it that way, but okay.
Yeah, because I think she even has a line in the movie where she says, like, I'm not usually the one to, like, you know, like, talk to people or, like, do this and stuff like that. Right. But she's doing everything, like, she's very, I don't know, straightforward.
Well,
I don't know if that's the character that Finn, right, like, kind of brings out also in her, because he's just kind of like this.
And she kind of likes him. She checks him out.
Sure. Yeah.
At first.
So it's interesting.
Okay.
Other than that, I mean, it feels very very subplotty, and at the same time, it feels like they're the Han Solo of the group. They're doing something. They're like the Han Solos, should I say? Because I feel like they're doing something that, like, it needs to get done, right? It's something ridiculously dumb, right? And ridiculous in general. But just by work. And they're the trio, you know, it's the duo, but this trio in this one.
I have a big problem with the B plot. This B plot and the whole Poe thing.
Yeah.
Where he's in a way trying to redeem his cavalier getting in the way of losing a lot of lives for little reward. Even if it's for big reward, is it worth it? And there's a whole lesson about saving people for the things you love instead of killing people for the things you hate. Right? There's that corollary. I think some character mentions it at some point.
Yeah.
I like that stuff. I really did. And I think they are going to be better people, or at least if they're written right, they're going to be more mature versions of these people, of Force Awakens and this movie. But I have a big problem with, like, a chain of command problems in this movie. And Laura Dern's character, I liked her. Laura Dern, who is, I guess, the commanding in chief in the moment, right? In the and that's good. I liked her, but I don't like the very simple fact that she could just fucking told them.
Right, exactly.
What they needed to know.
Right.
What the third act solution would have been.
Right.
And none of this would have happened. Now, obviously, they wouldn't have grown as people if they didn't do it, but that's not the point. I liked how
it just feels very.
It was enough for me, but
yeah. Well, it just felt like a very simplistic, like explanation. Like, it almost feels like, well, why? Like, there's no explanation towards it of why you wouldn't do that.
Right. What if there was actually a mole on the ship?
Yeah, but it's never.
And it wasn't
up.
Hyperspace tracking; it was the mole.
But it was. But mole, mole, mole.
Awesome powers. Mole.
Yeah.
Another movie where part two is better than. Part one and three.
The Shagbots.
I think. So I think we should probably get into spoilers pretty soon, but let's, because I think we're talking around it now.
It was hard.
Spoilers in 5.
What do you think of Kylo Ren?
4. Oof.
Go ahead.
What, I can't say Kylo Ren?
It's going to be spoilery.
Oh, okay, fine. What do you think of the look and feel of the movie then? Let's talk about more aesthetics.
It looks amazing. I think whatever team they have behind making funny furry creatures is awesome.
Oh, by the way, a lot more puppets and practical effects. Almost everything was practically shot. Yeah. Opening scene.
Which is really well done. Because
remember how he kind of milks that creature?
Oh, blue milk.
Blue milk.
Yeah, it looked like Gatorade coming out of that thing.
Yeah. That was a fun throwback.
But there's a lot of... do we feel like that was a big difference? Did it make a big difference for you in the aesthetic of pleasing of this movie? Was it pleasing for you? Was it worth it?
Porg is pleasing.
Was it worth watching the real porgy instead of CGI ones? Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
For me, practical is always better.
Yeah. Virtually always. I always go back to The Thing on that. The movie The Thing, of course. Yeah. I definitely love that stuff. And
the first one.
There are some great color palettes and great set pieces that weren't just action. Some of them were like really nice tricks of editing that were used to accentuate whatever they're trying to say in the moment. There's nothing is static in this movie. The camera moves a lot. It does a lot of interactions with the scene that they're in, either a hallway or in space or whatever. And I never really noticed that as a problem in the other movies before until this one, because it was so playful. Mm-hmm. The camera was everywhere. There were extreme close-ups. At the right times, especially with
the
Ray.
NFL Skyview. Oh, that was pretty good, yeah.
The what?
NFL Skyview.
NFL
Skycam.
Skycam, I don't know what that is.
It's just like an overshot view like this, like a lot of the time.
Oh, okay.
Like a drone.
Like a drone-ish kind of thing.
Sure, just like that then. Yeah. Sure.
Only on wires.
And sports. Right, you're talking about sports.
Yeah, I'm talking about sports. So they said football.
Sports talk. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I said NFL.
Football.
And I said NFL.
I really like the stuff anyway, is my point. And overall, I do recommend this movie, and I will watch it again. I want to see it again to make sure it solidifies a lot of these opinions.
What I really like about the movie is that it really feels like they're in different worlds. It feels like they're in different planets. It feels like they're in different things. Obviously, well, like the set
they
pieces,
are.
You're like, where on this earth do they do this? Like, obviously the ship stuff, like, I get that, right? Mm-hmm. But like everything else, you're just like, where are you doing this? Because nowhere it looks like this. Like, what kind of backgrounds are you using? Like, what's going on here? Like, how much CG is it to practical to a mix of both? And they do a really good job. And I think the movies just in general.
Might be worth to see the making of stuff.
I think it's one of those type of movies where you almost want to.
I want to see how they make that and how they pull that off or how they combine them and stitch them together.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it reminds me of Breaking Bad because you think everything in there is practical and you'd be surprised how much of it is CG. But the way they stitch it together, it's really so good that you don't think
of
it.
You don't notice it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really good thing, yeah.
Like, the most CG they ever used in an episode, I think, was when you threw the pizza up in the air, I think it was one of them or something.
Yeah.
And the garage. Anyway, I really love that show. So, those are our general thoughts. Anything you want to add before we go into spoilers, Luke, by the way? Aesthetically or anything else? The score, maybe? We got the same guy doing the score. What's his name?
Score was good.
No, it was really good. I like Ray's theme a lot.
For some reason, I thought the opening theme was owned by...
Fox.
Fox.
The opening theme?
Yeah, with the crawl.
You mean the Star Wars theme?
Yeah.
Owned by Fox?
Yeah, because didn't Fox release the first movies? And I thought they owned the rights to the music, and they had to change the music for Force Awakens.
No, it was the same song, bro. It's always been the same.
I don't know. For some reason, I just thought the Force Awakens had something...
They've always been this. I mean, I have the Blu-ray downstairs.
But it don't matter. Now it's Disney.
Right, now it's Disney. Right, either way.
And I was like,
it doesn't matter.
Because I thought, like, hey, if that's the case.
Yeah, because this asshole decided to tell me while I'm trying to read. And he's like, music? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm trying to read shit. And then he's like,
wait, there's some shit going on.
You mean you didn't read the crawl while I was talking to you?
No.
I was talking to you and I was reading the crawl. Just no problem. Get on my level.
I think we should get into spoilers for Last Jedi starting right now.
That crawl sucked.
What do you want to say about Kylo Ren?
Okay, so... Oh, man, he's going to be a weird villain.
Oh, why?
Because he's such a torn villain.
I think he's the worst developed.
Like, no, because...
One of the worst developed.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
I feel the opposite. Okay, continue.
He's not Palpatine. He's not Snoke. They had good. They had great intentions.
I never liked those guys.
Well, no, here's the thing. They were clearly dark side.
Hitler wanted to save Germany.
Shut up. They were clearly the bad guys. There was nothing in them that was good. While he is this torn guy where he's just trying to put off this image. But deep down, you know, like the hesitation with shooting the ship where his mother's on.
Yeah, the other guy shoots him.
I still think fucking it was Han Solo that fucking turned on his lightsaber and he fucking offed himself.
No, Han did not off himself.
You never know.
But you're basically saying he's not evil enough. He's too pussy to be evil. He can't do it.
He's not developed. He's not true dark side.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Big disagreement.
Okay. What do you think? So I'm going to debunk or whatever the hell you just said, and I'll twist it for you, and I think I'm going to go with what Oscar kind of wants to say. I hope I am anyways, which is the beauty of the movie, the reason why
is that he's a beast.
Is Kylo Ren and Rey, they're... what Star Wars franchise I think wants to do, especially with the Force, is like, is that there is no, there. It's not just dark side and light side.
There's the gray side.
No, there's no dark side and light side. Is that you're always gonna have both? And Yoda said this throughout all of the movies, right? Is that there's always both. It's just not about falling into those pitfalls. And then the thing is, we've always been, you know, like, oh, this is completely dark side, this is completely light. So we're not having that anymore. It's a mix of both bags, and they're trying to fit in this world where they're both, they're this thing, and he doesn't know, because he wants to fit in this mold of what Darth Vader was, which is just pure dark side. But he's never going to be that, because he's a mix of both. He wants to be light, because he doesn't want to attack his own family. But at the same time, he wants to be dark, because he wants certain things done, but in a different way. He doesn't want what the rebellion wants. He wants power, right? Mm-hmm. So
actually,
seeming conflicted works great for me, actually, right? But What I don't like is that I just feel like he doesn't develop anything. Like with his moment of development where he does to Snoke, right? And you think he wants to, like, in this whole, like, talks beforehand with Rey, and these weird, like, I can see you, but you can see, and we can see each other, but you're even right in front of me, but I don't know what you're doing. Like, I can't see any of your surroundings. You're just in front of me, like, almost like this weird image. Yeah. Which I love that they didn't portray an image. They just looked at each other and just kept cutting scene from scene.
Those are good shots.
Those are really good shots, yeah. I think that's, like, the best development, but it just fucking goes to waste. And it's like, he just falls and he still doesn't know what he wants to do, and it's the beginning of the movie. Because, like, it's the beginning of the movie for him, character development-wise. And we don't get anything worse.
No,
that's the way I saw it.
Right.
Because I don't think he was developed. Right. He wants to force this. And he still doesn't know what he wants. He still doesn't know if he wants to be dark or light or both. He doesn't know how to do anything, deal with that.
He knows now. I think he knows by the end of the movie.
But
that was the thing. That was my problem.
I think he's trying to fake it.
No. Well, fake it till he make it?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, a lot of people do that. No. Here, my problem originally was going to be that if this movie does an Empire and actually ends on a big cliffhanger, yeah, is that we wouldn't know that, and yeah, I'd be pissed and frustrated.
I think what he was trying to do is just trying to follow this mold of what his predecessor, his ancestor was.
That's the thing, that was the first movie. That's why I hated him. He was a pussy. He was an asshole who just copycat.
But in this movie, you
a guy who actually killed the last Emperor.
Sure, but I said you obviously see a guy who still wants to fit this mold. But he doesn't know if he wants to anymore, you know, whatever. Like, he doesn't know where he stands with the Darth Vader mold. Then he disbands it. And then he wants to, with the mask, the whole mask thing, right?
Yeah.
And then he just wants to be himself. And I get, like, I guess towards the end, like, what he really wants to be or whatever. But for me, it was just, like, it still is not set in stone for him.
No, I think it is. I think what he just wanted to do, and when he finally figured out what he wanted to do, by the way, the way he was being taught by the Snoke guy clearly wasn't a big help for it.
Yeah.
What he wanted to do was go to the rhythm of his own beat. You know, he didn't want to be a Snoke follower. He wanted to be his own, and that's it. Like, I think he's more drunk with power than to be drunk with power with Snoke or as Snoke's servant.
Sure.
Like, Snoke's problem, if anything, even though we don't know anything about him, which is one of my problems with the movie.
Do I know
the
real?
Like, legit problems. I mean, is that
He's the stormtrooper from episode one that bumped his head on the door as it went up. That's where the indentation on the head is.
He's the guy who stole our uniforms and beat the shit out of us.
that was Snoke's story.
That was Spaceballs.
So he got to the dark side.
Spaceballs. Yeah.
Got really old, guys.
Watch out.
Sorry. It's fine.
We ain't found shit.
We're combing the desert.
We're combing the desert.
So stupid.
It's very literal, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mel Brooks.
Thank you, Mel.
God.
Cannot work in today's world, by the way. think about it.
No, I really can't.
No, his jokes wouldn't be funny at all.
Oh, God.
So, I think he had a big arc because he was not, he's not the same person in the first movie. The biggest problem I had is that the villain was nothing to me. Domhnall Gleeson is over the top. In this movie, they make fun of him for being over the top when Poe does the fake phone call, like, yeah, hold on. And that whole thing, they make fun of him being so serious all the time.
Yeah, so I didn't expect that in the movie, right?
That threw me off.
That threw me off, and
that
I was
threw
like,
everyone
okay,
off.
Where are we going?
But I went with it. I'm like, that's Rian Johnson,
but
sure.
But they made him so comic booky.
Yeah, it was so good.
And it just felt really bad. No, it felt bad in...
No, you're right.
It felt bad
you.
In taste. Like, it almost didn't feel right
you.
In the movie.
Yeah.
I found it funny, shit that was going on.
I liked it, yeah. But
it felt really off.
It felt like a different movie.
It felt like a different movie, exactly.
I'm with you.
It was giving different vibes when it was trying to do different vibes in the real movie.
And I guess that's the best thing I could say is that even though it did feel like a different movie, which could take you out of it, I still loved it. I still like seeing it. So
yeah, it's weird. I did like seeing it too, but it just felt like it didn't belong there.
So I think Kylo Ren finally became a villain that we can actually like get his hands dirty, and a villain that that we understand for once. Like the idea that his flashback is connected to what he is today, what he becomes at the end of The Last Jedi, and the fact that he was so sure that he wanted the resistance taken out for his newfound power that he himself is the only one to control. I mean, mainly because he can force choke people to death, Domhnall Gleeson, is what makes him the villain that's going to be in part three. What makes him the villain to take down, and that his arch nemesis he created in his own making by growing with Rey in this whole like bond thing they had going, the bridge thing, and him fucking up at the end by not killing the resistance. Like he made his own enemies. He made his downfall already. Yeah. But as we all know, it's going to happen. But I think what this movie does that it's really good is that in one hand, it says that, okay, fuck the old generation. We're going to have these new generation characters come in. And guess what? The main one, Rey, isn't involved with any Skywalker shit, and she or her parents are presumably.
What's a big reveal?
Presumably, that's a big reveal, and I don't know if it's true
Are you guys expecting a fucking like in whatever episode 9?
Yeah,
like a big thing like her parents are actually blah.
I would hate it if it
I would
that.
Fucking hate it.
Yeah, I don't want her origin known
because the last shot of this movie
because the beautiful thing is
that not right, the other thing
exactly. The beautiful thing about like the answer that we get, the reveal that we get is like a reveal that's not a reveal that but we know the answer to it, which is like she's not, and obviously Kylo Ren says it like you're nobody, like you come from nobody. Your parents were assholes.
And that's his problem. Like, his problem is that he thinks for a long time before he chose to go on himself to his own dark side is that he thought it was supposed to be Master Sith and then Sith Servant.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a two-man operation. He's supposed to follow some older guy. He realizes he cannot. That's his way of being the new generation. Okay. Her way of being the new generation is how she was born. The fact that she is a nobody and can still understand the Force in a way that Luke has been teaching her that is completely anti all of the other movies that have come before it, which is important, guys, because I think it's going to bring on movies that are not going to look like anything else that we've seen before in this fucking franchise. And that's all I wanted from these movies. Yeah, that's all. I want something I've never seen before. And I think they finally told a story good enough for it to support it in the next movies, in the next tier of movies. And that's all I wanted. I want different stories. I don't want the same fucking thing all the time.
That is one thing.
And I think that's what they're paving the road for. Yeah, I mean, and I think they did a good job.
They did do that. They are changing.
Here's my thing, though.
The past.
So in those flashbacks,
people are pissed.
Because they want the old thing again.
Well, people want people want Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but no, people don't want shit on everything you loved before.
Well, the movie's not. The thing is that the movie loves that stuff too because of the way you treated Carrie Fisher and Han Solo and all these people.
But exactly, but the thing is like it's not shitting on everything.
It's like saying like it's got to change. We got to embrace it and move on.
Because a lot of people shat on all the prequel stuff. A lot of people, and I'm talking about like just the not the only critics or whatever, but like
everybody,
the people, right? And it's a running gag like everywhere that the prequels are obviously the inferior products of the Star Wars
in many ways they are,
right? And it's just like, well, I mean, and a lot of you can mention just about anything in the movies, and they're like, oh, it's a running gag.
There's some good stuff in it. But
sure, there is.
In many ways, they still
appear. I 100% agree. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, like, so the movie discarding that, and you're like, oh, why? How could you do that to us? Like, what do you mean, how could you do that to us? You guys make fun of it all the time.
And it's not even discarding it. It's saying, like, it's no longer the age of that. It's not saying that that never existed. It's just saying the age of that, it doesn't exist anymore.
That's exactly
we're moving on. I think they're doing it in such a passive, loving way. Johnson is and company is doing it in such a way where no one should be offended by this. It is time to move on. Not every movie is going to be the same movie. I mean, J.J. Abrams is going to direct the third film, I think. So we're going to get like basically a lot of action and fun and popcorn heavy.
I agree with you.
And I love that stuff.
I love the whole Skywalker thing. How he says, you know, we've stop romanticizing the Jedis.
Right.
Blah, blah. I mean, we were so arrogant and whatnot, and
yeah, it feels
we
like.
Created problems, and
right.
we were too stupid to see, you know,
and even
the rise of Palpatine, and then
exactly.
the entire downfall.
And they weren't ready for it.
Yeah.
At all. And Palpatine was the smartest person in the galaxy, really. And the way he took advantage of that kind of system. And even, what's his name? The green guy?
Yoda.
Yoda. Even he says that, and he, you know, in his way, you know, how he struck fire to the fucking
temple.
By saying, like, it's move on time. He didn't say it like that, but he says something to that effect. And it makes sense. Like, he's supposed to move on. And which goes hand in hand with Luke Skywalker's, I don't want to say suicide, but his own death in the movie. Which,
sacrifice,
yes.
It's a sacrifice.
It's a crazy thing. I mean, what do we think of that fourth act? Because that is a fourth act. The
when did you think the movie should have ended?
Well, the or movie I thought was going to end
was your first ending?
When they kill Snoke. Around there, like
a little bit after that.
A minute before, a minute after, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, around there. Yeah. That's my thinking. What do you guys think?
Well, no, because there are still other things to find out, like what it's going to
be. What I'm saying, that's why I feel like this movie doesn't feel, it feels like an ending. The ending feels like an ending of this movie, more than other endings, in my opinion, with the kid and stuff, which represents everything that the movie's been trying to say in one shot.
For sure. Yeah.
And at first, I didn't like it because I'm like, I didn't get it at first. It took me a
who's this little wiener kid?
Right. It took me a day to realize, like, oh, what the ring meant in correlation to what he's looking and to how he's being enslaved by this society. I hated the Monte Carlo scene. Not hated, but it's my least favorite thing.
Yeah.
But how they tied it into the whole world effects of what should be a hero and you should be your own hero and you can aspire to do that. You don't have to be a Skywalker.
Yeah.
That's perfect. I loved it.
Yeah.
So I'll suffer any Monte Carlo scene again in order to get that last shot again. So I love that. Yeah. And I feel like everything was solved. That's why it didn't feel like a middle movie to me. That's why I feel like Kylo Ren's going to be an even better, more pronounced villain in the third film. Yeah, he's going to have that childish, those childish tendencies, but...
Because he's a child.
He's
right.
Of course, any villain...
That's a big realization they have to come to in this movie, is that... And this is what I like about the character development for the rest of the guys, is like, nobody has it set. Everyone's still young in this movie. Everyone that already has it set are all these old admirals, all these everybody else, and they're trying to do things how the old stuff used to work when they're working with new technology, new things going on, right? Mm-hmm. New problems in the world, new people trying to step up and take over, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to, you know, they're trying to integrate themselves or whatever, but it's hard. And you see a person like Poe, who we think has it kind of already, like, set up in the first movie, right?
Right.
We think of Poe as a set guy. Yeah, he's gung-ho and stuff like that, but you in this movie, you're just like, no, he's just a kid who's... Like,
we've seen consequences
from we see the consequences for his actions.
Him being Han Solo-ing.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's a big thing, because he's just like, no, like, I'm right. And you're like, no, you're seeing one
step
side
back,
of things.
Right.
Like, you need to step way fucking back.
Yeah, and that's why Laura
doesn't
start teaching.
You're zoomed in,
and
you're like, oh shit, I've been drinking this, you know,
right.
or whatever. It's just plain and simple. So, and that's the really good thing about his character development, for example.
What were we going to say, Luke, earlier? I know that you were going to say something. Well, I saw you about to say something like a minute ago.
No, it was going to be, that's why I'm interested in Kylo Ren, because he's the most torn person.
So who was the one who didn't like you? The one who looked up.
I thought he had the least character development.
Least character development.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're good with him then.
Yeah.
You like him.
Well, because he's going to be interesting in the fact that he's still torn, whereas the other guys were just full evil.
Oh, see, I thought you were saying that he needed to be that full evil.
No. That's what makes him different than.
Oh, then I like you way better. I like you way better, Luke. Because I'd rather have a villain that has fucking third dimensions to him than just a villain. By the way, one of my favorite scenes of all of these movies, even the prequels, is actually a prequel movie. I think in the Revenge of the Sith. That's the third one, right? No. Right? That's the Revenge of the Sith?
Yes.
Sorry, I forgot all these names. Is the scene when Palpatine is talking to
Anakin
before he turns him.
Uh-huh.
They're talking. He's watching some weird operatic thing, worm thing going on, and he's talking about one of the older Sith lords, right? A bad guy essentially, right? Not Jedi, Sith lord that was able to manipulate the Force in such a unique way that made him so exemplary from not just Sith lords, but from any kind of Force. Adaptable person, right?
Yeah.
And he tells his story about how he could have changed death in a moment's notice. He could change and revert life and bring life back into death and all this stuff. He has this whole speech going on. And he, in it, he kind of talks about his political problems with the Jedi and how they are narrow-minded and dogmatic and they don't make sense and they're two-dimensional in the way they think. And he's telling the story about this other great general guy, this Sith Lord hero, who was able to do the one thing that we all would love to do, and not as a bad thing, but as a good thing, to reverse death. And that in his story, he talks about how the guy could have done it to anyone, but he could never do it to himself. And that's the real thing that humbles that Sith Lord in this story. And and we're getting this story from Palpatine, who later becomes the black and white villain of the first trilogy in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I don't know how what happened between there and then.
He's just so far gone.
Right. And that's insane. And I wish we got that story. But I think we're getting that story from Kylo Ren now, in the moment. I think we're getting that kind of virtue that we need. You know, I'm just basing it on one story, but it's one of my favorite scenes is that story. So, I don't know, it reminded me of that. And I like how Kylo Ren's going with it. And I guess I understand how he might have the weakest amount of character development. He's always such a little spoiled brat.
Right, well, it just feels like he started off where he ended where he started. Hmm. Like, he was still conflicted. I guess there's more of a seated nature of what he just has power now. And that is what he wanted, right? But it's he's still conflicted, right? Which was what we're leaving off with.
Yeah.
But he's in charge.
Yeah. Well, we all gave our opinions on that. Let's talk about the B plot of the. So another thing I thought they were gonna end before reaching that planet. But we actually get the solution to that planet. You know, the resistance.
Oh, okay.
So that was another thing. I thought they were going to end like cliffhanger. Will they make it there? You know, because they're still being chased. The whole movie, they're being chased. It's a weird chase that's barely explained. I don't know how this giant ship can't kill this ship, but
they do a one-liner.
Right.
Right. It's just like
okay, fine.
Our photon, whatever.
I didn't think it was going to be the whole movie, but I guess it turned out to be like 90%
of it. Yeah. So. They're like our shots or whatever are too out of range for their shields to take damage.
My biggest problem with this movie is the B-plot stuff.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I'm not giving it 5 stars, for example, is Laura Dern could have fucking just told Poe this. I mean...
Yeah, that's annoying.
Because everyone knows how Poe reacts. The film opens up with his mistake of pushing through. Yes, they killed the Dreadnought, but at the cost of all of those people. And we get the representation of all those people by that one bomber that releases the bombs.
Can I play devil's advocate for Poe?
Please do.
By killing the Dreadnought, maybe they survive those 18 hours and not having this big ship come at them and possibly kill them.
I know. And also, and obviously, and people get angry about this, but the lesson he supposedly learns is when Finn is going to dive into the cannon at the end, right? Mm-hmm. And he stops him right before he does it. I'm like, he would have taken the cannon out and saved them, but would it have saved them anyway if they're still trapped in there?
Right. Or is it just stalling for time?
Right. But Luke did that.
Inevitable death, yeah.
Luke did that. He did the stalling.
Right, exactly.
We'll talk about that, right? Yeah. Hyperspace going through a ship. Never thought I wanted that. Now I want it in every movie.
That was amazing.
Now I want it in every movie I see about space. Do you like that?
What part?
How Laura Dern takes the hyperspace in order to save the resistance through the fucking ship.
That was
cool. In the theater, we're all like in silence, and for a moment, we were like, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
At least I was. I mean. So the problem is with the B plot, is that they learn a lesson, but all of it was useless because they didn't need to do it. And ultimately, we kind of bash movies when they do that. So this movie is no exception. So I kind of have to bash it a little bit. There is good reasons for it. Like I said, we get the Monte Carlo stuff, which leads to the ending of the last shot, which I love.
Yeah.
But still, we got fucking Monte Carlo. And I liked it, but it just wasn't the best thing. It was the worst thing of the movie. Not to say it was bad. It was just like, in the end, they didn't need to they just had to sit tight. That's what they had to do. Just sit tight and have conversations, and the movie would have been shorter. I'm not saying would make it better, but it would have made it better. Maybe.
Yeah.
So that's my problem with
The whole thing is that we're,
it's not a big complaint because.
No, I get it. But at the same time, like, it's like, you can't sit tight. It's like.
I know.
It's like waiting at the bus stop. You know, like, do you want to wait at the bus stop? And you just. Maybe it'll come in 5 minutes. Maybe it'll come in 15 minutes. Or do you want to just, I'm just going to walk it for now, and then I'll catch up
walk
with
the next
stop.
Right,
and walk to the next stop or whatever. Yeah. But what happens if you walk in between the two stops, and then you just fucking lost it? You could have waited it out, but at the same time, do you just want to stand there waiting?
But this time, there's a lot of lives at stake.
Right, I get it. But at the same time, like, we want to try to go do something.
Yeah.
Well,
no,
I hear that, that's the...
And again, I liked it. I loved how there was a whole story to it, and it did give them development yeah. that they needed, that I didn't know they needed from the, cause how gung-ho and juvenile they were in the first movie. But, yeah, at the expense of a lot of running time that led to just more disaster, kind of hurts. Kind of hurts a little bit for me.
Sure.
Just thinking about it, I mean. The fourth act, Salt Planet. By the way, Salt Planet looked amazing.
It's like the opposite of Hoth.
The red and white was badass. I don't know about you guys. With those old ships where they were marking, it looked like a... what's the game with the dragon things? You know what I'm talking about? Sudo, right?
Okay.
Sudo? The game, the board
Sudo,
game.
Yeah, Sudo, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's like that.
They said Sudo. I was like, what the hell is Sudo?
Sudo. Yeah. Raw R, like a short R.
Sure.
Sudo, like the Linux command?
Is that a Linux
Sudo
command?
Apt?
No, I don't know anything about that. No, but it looked like that, you know, when they were like, when they were coming towards the ATA, RTs, whatever they're called, the walkers.
ATXTs?
Yeah, sure. And it was coloring everything red and the red lines. It was cool. The whole thing was really badass. I really liked that whole scene. It was a good color palette, a lot of red. We never talked about the fight scene at the... With Rey and Kylo.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Well, that was before that. But anyway, what do we think of this whole, like, finales of finale? Because there's, like, a few endings that I didn't see coming until they came.
And then we didn't get anything that we thought we should have got.
Well, I got what I wanted. Right. But what did you want to get that you didn't get? What are you referring to?
Exactly? Oh, I meant the death of us. Of what's her name?
Carrie Fisher?
Yeah. Well, I thought we were going to get
it. I thought it was right off the bat in the beginning scene.
Right, I thought we were going to get it.
Oh, did we buy that, the whole thing about her the coming force? Back in? Or using the Force? Where she no, we know she
it's
has
it. It's doable.
Yeah, right.
It's canon. They did in the EU. I looked it up.
Okay. Did you buy it, Ruff? Do you think it was over the top?
I thought it was a little bit over the top.
Okay.
Badass,
but at the same, but at the same time,
it was
like...
still badass, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It still worked out.
She comaed herself in there.
Right. I mean, this is why she's, like, you know,
we do
charge.
Get little flourishes of her using it, like, when Poe takes command by force, and she breaks down the door with her force, you know? So it's almost like this thing, like, the older you are, the more you're going to get it. Even if without any practice or training, she can still use it.
I mean, she probably could.
There's some raw power there.
Yeah, there's some raw power. I don't think she can use it very well. But
No.
Just when it needs it.
Yeah.
Kind of like
does that mean General Akbar's dead now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Rip. Kind of sucks, right?
Why do we love him? I don't.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. That's the only reason.
Okay, then I don't care. I never understood why they keep. I hear Akbar in every fucking review.
It's a trap,
and I don't get it.
That's the only reason. That's literally the only reason.
Okay. Just because those three words.
Okay. They're not worth it, man. He's dead now.
It's a trap.
He's dead.
It's okay.
Do we like Luke Skywalker's feint? F-E-I-N-T.
No, I know what you meant.
Okay.
On the spice planet?
I love that.
I'm just going to call it Dune.
Dune. On Dune,
oh, shit, yeah. I totally say that.
Yeah, that's Dune-y.
That was awesome how he just comes in, just says Brex shit.
We'll call it White Mars.
White Mars. Well, it's right underneath.
Exactly.
Was
it a white coat?
Yeah, it does have a white coat. I mean, I think that was badass.
I mean, the scene where he's getting bombarded by lasers, right? By all the shots, and then he just shrugs it off. And you're just like, what the fuck did he do to, like, avoid all those things?
Everyone laughed. It was good.
I mean, it was great. It was a great scene. That's, like, one of the moments of, like, levity that he brings in that works, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It was a great scene because he's just like... And I think Mark Hamill does just a great job of being Luke Skywalker.
But no one got that he was. And by the way, apparently, if you look deep into before that, is that he doesn't cast a shadow. He doesn't leave footprints. I mean, he doesn't leave footprints on the salt.
Yeah. Also, like Leia knows, because like she even like the necklace thing he gives her.
Yeah.
She just leaves it there because she knows it's an apparition or whatever.
Right. And I didn't get those. In the moment, I was just so hyped up in the moment that he was there.
Holy fuck, Skywalker's there.
So
they
pulled the trick on me.
Yeah, man.
I got fooled.
You got hoodwinked.
Jedi mind trick.
I got Kaiser Soze'd about it.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. I totally dug that.
Came out with the Rolex one.
And I love how he was able to stall, like avoiding these attacks, but just avoiding, he couldn't attack them.
Yeah.
But he had to appear like he could attack them.
Yeah.
And that was pure
genius. How much were we expecting Ben Kenobi?
Death. Right.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
In a way, it happened, but it happened in a way we didn't even see coming.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
And all of this stuff is in a way we didn't see coming. Like, you see the starfighter in the training scenes when it's underwater.
Yeah.
And we think that he's going to make Rey fucking lift it. Yeah. No. That's just, no. just showing
She's
you.
She's got the Millennium Falcon. Right. So she needs that shit.
Right. Exactly. So, things like that.
Yeah.
And that was just super cool. I loved it. I think some people in our theater anyway, which is packed, of course, weren't too sure about that. I seemed like a lot of people, I heard some people groan about it. I'm like, no, dude. And him looking at the twin stars from his own home planet in Tatooine before he died was perfect.
Yeah.
He didn't have to say shit. He didn't have to say, oh, Tatooine or hello, mom or nothing.
Yeah.
Just fucking, just double stars. The most iconic shot in the beginning of Star Wars, of the first movie.
Yeah.
So, yes. Thank you. It's a perfect ending for him. And also a another weird reversal because you think it's going to be fucking Carrie Fisher.
Right.
Leia. Sorry. Yeah. Should we say Leia? Yeah, you think it's going to be Leia and it's not. And they reversed it again. And
right.
Maybe she'll be like that. She died in her sleep in between the movies. They might do that. Or they might bring her back like the way they brought in the other guy.
With CGI? No, I don't think they're going to do the CGI type of thing.
Well, they've gotten so much better at it now that you can pull it off.
I think they said they weren't going to.
Oh, good. I don't want that. I would not have that. But what was it? Rogue One, right?
Yeah, Rogue One. Yeah.
Which I had complaints about. But
I so did.
Yeah, it was too obvious for me.
Yeah.
What do we think about I really love the fights in the Red Room. I don't know what needed those guards, but...
Yeah. So what's the point of that scene?
To be badass, I guess.
Is that the only reason?
Well, you mean the fight scene?
To show
or
the power?
The scene where the point of that scene is to kill Snoke.
Sure, but what's the point of the fight?
To be fucking badass, bro.
Yeah.
Dude, did we just flick the lightsaber to fucking kill
him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I bring it up because, like, you think it's to be badass, but you can tell they're not there. They don't have that ability. They don't have the finesse that, like, I guess a Jedi would, right?
Not
a Jedi.
This is
what I'm trying to say.
Experience,
is
right?
I guess I'm saying. Yeah. Listen, they're not experienced.
They gained a level.
They're not experienced, right? And going against this, I guess that's what it's for, to show us that they're still, like, this just raw thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it almost didn't feel like you don't get that in the moment. So you have to think about that.
I think after the fact, things that I thought of that scene that I could probably play as defenses, but not too harshly because it can go either way. Is that it shows how they fight together, but really they fight separately. They don't really fight together until
really
the very
don't.
Last moments.
Yeah.
You could tell the way their styles are very.
If you look at the way people fight together,
you can tell the guards go after Kylo more because they know what he's capable of more than Rey probably. And they just saw Rey fail like 3 times against Snoke. You know?
Right. Well, I think...
I just wanted to know if those guys were the Knights of Ren or not. Because if they were, they didn't put up that much of a fight.
Well, no, if you look at any of the prequels, when there's Jedi and Padawan, and they're always together, they're always training, like they work together to fight off, like to, you know, they as partners, right?
Yeah.
And that's in comparison to this, they're all working together consistently. And this one, Ren and Rey, they're having their own fights.
Yeah, they do have
their own fights. Like, they help each other when it, like, at the very end when they notice that they need help.
Oh, no, a little bit of here and there, but it wasn't not,
yeah,
not
but
enough
it,
to
but
call
it wasn't
the
like
teamwork.
This, it wasn't like a teamwork effort, exactly. And it never was. Yeah. And that's there's a big difference between, like
the, and that says all the answer you need from her running away at the end.
Yeah.
Right. Or leaving, or going their separate ways.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the best thing I can come up with, other than being cool, which I thought was really cool. A lot of red in major movies this year.
Yeah.
That and...
before we... Because I think later. We're getting close to wrapping this.
I think so.
I want to get back to that scene where she goes into the hole.
I wanted to talk about it too. So what did you see?
So I just saw this... She goes... We go down this hole, right? To where the dark side lives, supposedly, right? Where the dark is... And she sees this thing. She wants to find answers, right? And she sees this like crystal where she sees endless reflections of her, right? And this is where the dark side is. The dark side lives. And she just sees an endless amount of hers, right? Reflections, like a mirror upon mirror upon mirror upon mirror. Like that weird trick that they do with the computers and the pictures and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like the scene for me is clear as just like you are the dark side. There's nothing else. There's no other answer. Like there's you. That's it. You are the dark side. As much as you are the light, that you like all of this is you still.
I thought it was showing her that she is just as capable about it as anyone else because she's interacting with it.
Yeah.
But also that she has no hang-ups to it. Like, the only question that mattered to her seemingly, because she asks it in that scene, I think, is who are my parents or where are they? And it doesn't matter.
Yeah, what I'm saying.
And you get that at the end of the movie, of course.
Right, right. But well, she supposedly falls down this, where the dark side lives, supposedly, right? Right? That's what I'm saying. Is like she, yeah, it doesn't, in the end, like you are the one who's going to become if you want to. No. There's nothing else.
Right.
That's, yeah. So it's just her.
Like, when you think of the Sword of Truth, right? I mean, like, it's all a sense of
kind of, yeah.
Justice is whatever you think justice is. It's not like, I'm not saying that's how it all works, but in a sense of like, if you're the executioner, who you believe is evil is going to die, you know, by the power that you, whatever, you know, and that reference is not as great. But, and my point is that you can't live without death and evil. It goes both ways. You know, if you want to have life, you have to have death. If that's how you see the Sith, or not Sith, but like the dark side with the light side, they both have to exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Communally, which is why I always, one of the major things I didn't like about those prequels, especially the whole prophecy thing, I hated. But more so is this whole thing that Anakin's going to balance the Force once and for all. I'm like, no. If that was the case, then there'd be no evil ever again. And that's not true.
Yeah.
That's impossible. You're never going to have an asshole out there ever again. Right. How does that
that's
work?
Not balancing the Force at all.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to come back again because we can't have it all tipped one way in the scale.
Right.
What did you see in that scene, Luke? You seen anything else or any other possibilities?
At first, I thought it was going to be like another throwback to Empire Strikes Back. Where kind of Luke goes into that thing and kind of like faces Vader.
Oh, I don't remember that at all. I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, where he goes into the tree trunk, yeah. Or whatever, the tree.
Oh, thing. Sure, okay.
And then so that's what I thought was kind of like a test.
Okay,
like a Jedi type test. But now with the whole dark and light thing, I think kind of it's like, you know, up above ground, you were in the light, now you're in the dark, and you got to balance yourself in the middle. So you need to use both.
Yeah, it's another way of what we were saying. Exactly right. Cool.
Jedi.
But I can see how people can be confused because it's all told in abstract, like, right. Form, right? It's the weirdest scene because it just doesn't follow any sense of reality, really.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Right. It's a little Lynchian, right? Just a little, not like a lot.
I don't know. Let's call up our buddy Ryan Johnson because he's a fan and
yeah,
ask him about it.
He's totally a fan. You should write in, Ryan. Anything else on The Last Jedi? I mean...
Don't write in. Mail's horrendous this time of year.
Right. Anything else on The Last Jedi, I guess?
Who's The Last Jedi?
Well, Luke.
No.
No?
She's obviously the Jedi now.
There's no Jedi anymore.
No, there is no Jedi. That's why he
or
was
is
the last
there because she kept the books.
She has the books.
I know, she took the books.
She took the books. She obviously wants to become part of something, or she wants to name herself.
There's a lot of wisdom
Jedi
in there. You know, I'm sure there's something she can get out of it, right?
Yeah.
It's not The Last Jedi.
But we're excited for the third film?
Duh.
Okay, it's not like a dog. I mean, it could be less. I mean, do we feel like this movie is better or worse than when you walked into this room to talk about it?
Better.
Okay, what?
To not give you the satisfaction, about the same.
I hope that this is my Two Towers to Return of the
That's
King.
Him? You hope that what?
This is the Two Towers to my Return of the King.
Oh, because you always hope the next movie is better. I don't think the next one's going to be as better, but I hope it is.
You could have a new hope. Yeah.
I really hope. Well, the thing is that the third one's just got to solve a lot of things and just end it, right?
You could have a new hope for the Return of the Jedi.
But are we excited for Rian Johnson doing his own three movies?
Yes.
We want that?
I'm interested
in it. I definitely want to see
where he controls all of the aspects of the
trilogy. I want to know what's going to happen. What's going to come out of that sweet, sweet brain of his.
Well, I want to see his original stuff too someday. So
yeah.
I want to see his
his
loopers later on.
He needs to do like something for himself too.
Yeah. One for me, three for them.
Yeah.
Looper two.
All right, guys. That's our
Franco.
That is our review of The Last Jedi, and that is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. You can follow me and my movie watching habits as well as on Twitter on Letterboxd as Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with ARMEN. Luke?
At Blind Noir. And hopefully I will be at the Palm Springs International Film Festival this year, if the stars align and I'm able to get there.
Yeah, you're going there for work. And for how
I'll
long?
I'll be in the vicinity.
How long?
A couple months.
Okay. Ruff? People follow. Find you. Where can people find you?
Right. Right. Where can people follow me?
Find you.
Find me?
Find you.
You follow them.
Dark
alleys.
Dark alleys.
That's totally you, not me. I only wear my sunglasses at night. You could follow me at Gamer Ralph on Twitter. That's with two R's and an F.
Okay. So, Luke, you will be leaving us. Are you going to send me recordings of your top 10?
Possibly.
You have to.
I have no choice.
So then why did you ask him? You just tell him.
I mean, you
send me recordings of your top 10.
Yeah, I know. Well, I guess I asked as a test question.
Hopefully, I will be able to still watch some movies.
My point is,
I will be closer to movie theaters.
Like, my
point is that next time we're coming back, next time in 2 weeks, we're going to be doing our top 10 shows. And we're going to release 3. And our top 10 discoveries, which I will be doing with Ralph. I think just you and me, Ralph, on that one, right?
Right? You wanna I don't know if I'll have a list, so.
Right.
Top 5, right?
No, top 10.
I could drop on the top 5.
Top 10? You could. Maybe Luke can drop our 5, but I don't think so. You and I can make up 10.
Top 7?
7.5?
It's 10.
We could pull one.
We might start with discoveries. We might start with TV, but we always end with movies. And that'll be in January, of course, because it comes out 2 weeks from now, so it'll be January something. And then after that, we're going to take a break from podcasting. That'll be the only vacation we'll get. And then we'll come back in February with Oscar nominations and the first reviews and so on. We start with the new year. So this is our last movie review, technically, for a while. So
unless you're not cheap and you cough up some cash for those sweet, sweet bonus episodes.
That's right. Do you remember what it was? What it is?
For December, it is Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water.
Nice. I said it better myself. It is The Shape of Water. I mean, that's a good movie, I heard. I haven't seen it yet.
Doing it in what? December 31st, right?
Yeah, that's when we're doing it. It'll be out for people who donate. Anyway, remember...
$3.
Remember, feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website, otherpodcast.com, once again, just in case you forget. And if you are subscribed to our show, please rate us on iTunes for the best way people can find us on the interwebs. What were you going to say, Ralph?
No, I was going to say, also, if you have Android, no, don't have iPhone, because you know the podcast app only exists on iPhone.
Right.
You can always download an app that allows you to get podcasts like Pocket Casts, Double Twist, things like
is
that.
Is Double Twist still around?
I think so.
Okay.
You can use those to find the podcast. They just get everything from iTunes. That's all. That's basically how it works. You get the information from iTunes, and then you get to download it.
And you should do that for the other podcasts you listen to and love, because that gives them more traffic that they want.
Right, exactly. Maybe you can't leave those reviews, but
and
you know what?
Free.
You still give people downloads.
It's just free.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost you anything but like 30 seconds, a minute every time, whatever, to do it. Yeah, we recommend that. And until then, guys, have a safe and happy holidays. Get drunk. I mean, don't get too drunk, I meant to say. But yeah, you can get drunk. Where are we getting drunk?
Don't drink and drive.
You can drive.
Don't drink and drive.
No.
Yeah, you'll spill the ruin the upholstery.
Yeah.
Right. The drinking and driving should be like hours apart.
Just take an Uber.
And a nap in between.
Anyway, but we're saying goodbye for the year, guys, essentially. So goodbye 2017?
Yep.
2016.
Sure.
2016. Thank you. Hello 2018. See you guys later next year. Bye. Arrivederci. We'll meet again.
Anyways.
You could say hello and then goodbye, and you still might beat Luke. Little jab at you, Luke, while you're in, where is he? Miami?
Yeah, somewhere way warmer than here.
California.
He sent me a snap.
I thought he was in Florida.
I thought it was Florida. It's California?
I think it's California.
I thought Palm Springs was
It was like...
It's Palm Springs, California.
Well, the two states that have palms in it, guess which two are there? Jesus Christ, it's not that bad of a mistake. I was going to say, he sent me a snap. He said he slept 11 hours. I'm like, that motherfucker.
I've done that past like week.
I was
telling Ralph about that. Yeah, because I've been off because of my surgery. So.
Right. Wait, where did you get surgery? Sorry, it's really obvious.
The military's trying some new things.
The obvious MK Ultra. If you have to say with the bold letters this time. Oh, nice. Okay. So we never said what we thought about the movie. How we feel. You like it?
Yes, I thought it was fun.
It was better than I was expecting.
That is 99.9% positive.
Yeah, about the same. But,
all looked terrible.
Not that.
Yeah, the previews look pretty bad.
It didn't exceed my expectation that much, but it did exceed my expectations.
I didn't think I was going to laugh as much. And The Rock started first, I guess, but what's his name? Kevin Hart was like,
why are you in my Instagram shit, man? Like, why you started? Like, why are you in my story? I started this shit. He's like, no, man, I started this. And they were getting into it. And you're like, Kevin Hart trying to fight The Rock. Like, get out of here, right? And it was just really funny because it's behind the scenes shit.
I can't even fight his left hand.
Right, exactly.
Assuming he's a righty. I mean, like, that's how much I cannot beat him. All right. I think we're good.
That man's legit, though. Works out, like, 2 hours a day.
I mean, at this point, just keeping up the muscle on the muscle.
At this point, yeah.
It's like he has backup muscles in case the regular ones, like, fail him. Yeah. All right, here's ready. 5, 4, I'm going to read the long one here. 3, 2. And a brand new... Sorry. I just wrote this. It's so awful. Okay, I'm going to do it with a straight face. In a brand new Jumanji adventure.
You can't do it. You can't do it.
Why would you call it that? That's awful. I'm just going to skip that part.
Okay.
3, 2. What is it?
It's the Harry Potter collection.
What's it?
For $63.92.
Oh.
This is a really weird price.
Now, if they took out the first two movies and then took out $20, I would be all over it.
But here it says... $07.99 movies, okay. But they're all 4K compatible.
You have a 4K? He has a
4K. But not a 4K Apple TV.
It's like The Bachelor.
Yeah.
What?
We're not making fun of you at all.
Hater. Because I feel like if I, like, my love pick would be like my number one pick of the year.
Your love pick would be your number one pick?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Oh. You only have one movie a year. You can only love one.
I slightly like the other ones a little more than.
No, you can love any movie you like.
I did love this.
Okay,
it's fun. Porg was amazing.
Who?
Porg.
That's
the creatures on the planet.
The Saw planet.
No.
Oh, on the Jedi planet.
The Jedi planet.
Okay. Well, I don't know. It's like
it's fucking Porg.
It's like a few creatures. I don't know what they were called.
So there's a whole thing in like Star Wars is making cute furry creatures.
That's what they do. But they were cute.
Those crystal, like, wolf things, those are cute, too.
Yeah, those were cool. I like them.
Porg, man. When Chewbacca was about to eat it.
Oh, my God, that was really funny.
Oh, I loved it.
I really laughed on that one.
But, you know, I really loved it, but it's, like, you know, there's a wanting for the next part, the next episode.
Well, they all do that. I don't get it.
But the first one didn't do that for me. The first one was kind of like, yes, because it was just like, yes, I'm going to introduce this whole new thing. And then the middle one was like, okay, yes.
But it wasn't. I get it. It was a copy of A New Hope.
It's canon, though. So shut up.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes all the sense. It's canon. It
doesn't make any dollars either.
Canon.
No, I just don't understand that reference because they're all continual. They'll never end. I don't see a point. Like, last year's movie was an ending. They all died.